It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And so it is with this evening's program. We bid farewell to probably one of the weirdest months any of us have ever endured. The month of April 2020. It is the 30th day of April 2020. Tomorrow is Anniversary Friday for Agnes and me. Like I said, no changes to the program lineup, of course. But we'll do our celebrating on Saturday, but 27 years tomorrow. How about that? Amazing. But for the time being, we've got Corona in the side Thursday ahead of us, and every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude. This program is no different. And so thanks going out this evening, because I usually save the 30th day of the month to thank our Patreon subscribers. And so it is that thanks go out to that happy band who contribute on the first day of the month. That, for instance, on the first day, if you're a Patreon subscriber to the Horn, on the first day of the month, the previous month's subscription comes out. I know, I have a hard time sorting it out too, but that is apparently how it works. And so, the gratitude will begin. If you'd like to subscribe via Patreon, it's quite easy. Just go to headon.live and click on contribute, and that'll take you to the Patreon interface page. Oh, come on. Sometimes it helps if I type, you know, properly. And so the merry band of Patreon subscribers includes, that's the wrong page. There we go. Thank you very kindly to Aaron. Thank you, Aaron. Thank you to Albert in North Carolina. Thank you to Alex. Thank you to Andrea, and thank you to Andrew. Thank you to Andy the Angry Jew. Thank you to Annette. Thank you to Brother Deacon Asa. Thank you to Baltimore Bob. Thank you to Barb. Thank you to Barbara. Thank you to Bernadette and Brendan. Thank you, Brock. Thank you, Dave. Thank you, Ed. Thank you, Irwin. Thanks to Fab. Thanks to Glenn. Thanks to Hamilton. Thanks to our pal Horst in far Taiwan. Thank you to James, and thank you to another James. Yeah, I know, it's a little curious that way sometimes. This is thank you to James in New York City, and thank you to James who's not in New York City. Thank you to Jeff. Thank you to Jeremy in Vermont. Thank you to Joanne. Thank you to Joey in Ohio. Thank you to John in North Dakota. Thank you to John, who is not in North Dakota, but instead is in Wisconsin. Thank you to Joyce. Thank you to Carrie. Nope, that's Carl. Looks like it's time for some reading glasses. Thank you to Carl in Texas. Thank you to Kat in Ohio. Thank you, Kay. Thank you. That would be thank you, Kay. And then thank you to Kay in Arizona. Thank you to Lori. Thank you to Mark. Thank you to Marty. Thank you to Michael in North Carolina. Thank you to Mike in Cascadia. Thank you to Nick in Ohio. Thank you to Owen in California. Thank you to Prince. Thank you to Ron. Thank you to Robin. Ruth, thank you. Scott in Wisconsin, thank you. Thank you to Steve in New York. Thank you to Terrace in California. Thank you to our buddy the Nubian. And thank you to Vernon in San Diego. Thanks all very, so very much. You are all partial sponsors of the program, and you are a considerable reason why this program remains on the air. Thank you, one and all. So I had hoped that we would have Fundraising Free Radio for the end of the month, but we've got $200 to go to finish April for this evening. So that's where things stand. Hopefully we'll finish April to the good, and we'll begin afresh tomorrow with Bruce's Memorial Challenge to begin the month of May. Now, it is Thorona in the side Thursday, and we've got this is today just feels like hugging a saguaro cactus, because that is, you don't pronounce the G, do you? My Spanish is severely lacking. If you'd like to be part of the multimedia aspect, augmenting your live listening experience, run on over to headon.live and click on chat room. Anatole and House of Roberts and Jimmy and Lou and Otto and Squeaky are all waiting to greet you. And you will be capably moderated, of course, by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky. Enjoying a beautiful 83-degree day with not a cloud in the sky, where he has folded space because he's a third-stage guild navigator to become Man Cave in Northern California. I wish I could say the same, not about the folding space, but about the 83 degrees and clear blue skies and not a cloud in the sky and all that. But no. It's nothing but clouds here. Has it been for about the last 52 years, I think. It certainly feels that way. It's just one long February. That's what it is. And hopefully maybe we're just getting all the rain we need, because we're going to have a nice dry summer. But that, oh well. Yeah, oh hi, I'm Bob, and I'm looking for us to have a heck of a program this evening. We'll take care of of as much of the stuff in the stack as I can get to. And then at the top of the second hour, we'll be joined by our dear friend, not just mine, but ours, because he has become our dear friend over the course of the last year plus, Dan Fisher, joining us from New York to talk about life in the post-Clorox world, God almighty. And I think it will be, as it always is, a fascinating conversation. Dan is a raconteur of inestimable talent. And our conversations always range far and wide. He has fantastic talent, and I, of course, do my best every evening to deliver entirely adequate radio. Yes. So with the fundraising goal standing where it stands, Dan coming along here in about the next 50 minutes or so. Jesus, let's pull on the hip waders and dive right in. Let's start with some delightful stupidity. Because we can, you know, Thorn in the Side Thursday can go a long way towards some delightful stupidity. Oh, thank you. Our buddy Keith says, congratulations on y'all's 27th anniversary. My dear wife has been putting up with me for 28 years. Hope you and Agnes have many, many more. So do I. I'd be lost without her. And so I remain grateful every morning that I wake up and I go, hey, you're still here. Dadgum, I'm lucky. Let's go play the lottery. But yeah, thank you. Thank you, Keith. And happy times to you and your lovely spouse as well. Thank you to our dear sister Jude in the Great Northwest for getting us started this evening. That's most helpful and means we only got $175 to go. Thank you, Jude. Thank you so very much. Thank you, Randy, for letting me know the White Rose Society stream is rolling nicely, as well as over at fyination.com and headon.live. So that means that we should be cooking along on just about everywhere we should be cooking along. But like I said, let's start with some, I don't know if it's delightful stupidity, but by God, it's 200 proof stupidity. I mean, this is pure stupidity. There's nothing here but stupidity. And so this means, of course, it's probably going to involve someone from Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. And it does. Fox Nation host Tamale Lauren. Mm-hmm. It was just a few days ago when the powers that be at Fox allowed her to go on the air and declare that, she didn't go on the air. She went on Twitter and declared that the shutdown, the stay-at-home orders that we're engaging in order to try to flatten the curve and be good citizens and decent human beings and stop as much of the COVID-19 pandemic as we possibly may, now that the cat's out of the bag, as you were, because, of course, back when we could have maybe done a better job of stopping it, there was a certain nitwit Nero, who was blathering on about how, well, you know, right now there's 15 cases, and soon it'll be 5, and then it'll be 0. I don't think it's any big deal. If it is, it's probably a Democrat hoax. Yo, by the way, just to get our little moment of Alex Jones out of the way, you remember back in early January? Now, we've been talking about what happened on November 19th when he made that mysterious trip to Walter Reed Army Medical Center. Here's another weird moment. Early January, somewhere around the 6th, you remember when he showed up with a big Band-Aid across the back of his hand? And the official line out of the from the professional liars in the chop shop that is the White House press room. Remember how they explained it? Well, you know, he got a scratch playing with the kids. It's curious. He got that scratch right where you'd put in an IV line in the back of the hand. I know because I've had it from time to time. And God, I've gotten to where I tell them when they do that, not just stick it in the middle of my arm. That back of the hand shit hurts. But no, that happened. That happened. But back to Tamale Lauren, otherwise known as White Power Barbie. She tweeted and then promptly got rid of or deleted a declaration. And any time that a Kaylee like Tamale Lauren starts talking about slavery, you know it's going to be, it's not going to play well. You know it's going to be 200 proof stupid, as noted previously. She tweeted, "Compliance starting to look a whole lot like willful slavery. Hashtag reopen America." The point was to flatten the curve, not eradicate the virus. It may take a year or more to kill the virus, but the economy and livelihoods of millions are about to be destroyed entirely. Enough. Reopen America. Compliance starting to look a whole lot like willful slavery. Reopen America. Willful slavery. I actually had to sit and ponder that for a couple of minutes. I guess you could say that in the days of ancient Rome, when folks like Greek tutors and Greek academics would sell themselves into slavery and then go to Rome and set up shop teaching little Roman kids how to have their decent Greek and so forth, and eventually make enough money to buy their own freedom. I guess you could call that willful slavery. But the odds of Tammy Lauren actually knowing anything about that are somewhere between zero and mathematics cannot calculate that much impossible. Willful slavery. God, there's a lot of money in being a fucking idiot. There's a lot of money. And as is almost always the case, when one white winger starts blathering on about slavery or issues touching upon America's original sin, then there won't, another one won't be far behind. So white power blonde Barbie said that, and enter brunette white power Barbie, Deanna Lorraine. I know it sounds like a drag name, but that's what she calls herself. And she had to explain to the people who tune into her, whatever it is. Oh, why describe it? Let's just deal with it. It's an early hockey puck call for this Thorona in the side Thursday.
And you know what? And now, again, this isn't me being racist or anything, but I'm just reporting the facts.
Time out. When a privileged white chick has to begin what she's about to say by saying, "This isn't me being racist," you can run to Harrah's in Reno and lay down the last money you've got, whether it be a dime or $1 billion, if they'll take your bet, because what you're about to hear is going to be racist as fuck.
If there is truly a discrepancy, if there is truly, I'm not really buying it, but if it's true that the coronavirus is disproportionately affecting black people and they're apparently getting the coronavirus.
She doesn't necessarily believe it, because I guess she hasn't been invited to any funerals or anything, being said we can't have funerals, or maybe her one black friend didn't tell her about it, because she has a black friend. If you accuse what's her name, Deanna Lorraine, I can't be racist, I got a black friend.
Coronavirus at a higher rate than white people, then I do have to say this. Here's what I'm seeing. I'm getting reports, okay, from some folks saying that there's...
Ah, she's got reports from some folks. Well, now, this ought to be good.
Seeing a lot of black folks in their community having parties and barbecues and crawfish boils and other kinds of things. I am hearing reports about that, so...
Anybody want to bet? Is there going to be a mention of watermelons or fried chicken in the next, minute or so? Oh, that's okay. Now, the barbecues and the crawfish boils is enough.
Maybe they're causing this. Maybe they're bringing on the spread of the coronavirus themselves. And you know, they're not quite following the rules. And there's this viral video.
By the way, she used her dick fingers for the rules. The rules. You can hear the dick fingers, can't you? The rules.
Video apparently made the rounds a couple days ago. There's a video of some black folks in Chicago having a huge house party. So you can look this up. You know, of course, they're going to minimize it now. You can look it up for yourself.
They're going to minimize it. We don't know who they are, but they're going to minimize it.
House party in Chicago. It was making the rounds. And, you know, it's, I you know, like, I don't really care. If you want to have a house party, have a house party. I'm one of those people that I feel like if you want to do whatever you want in your own homes and you're healthy, go for it. But
in the age of the Trump pandemic, there's no such thing as healthy because you don't know who's got it and who ain't, because asymptomatic carriers are a big, big part of why this pandemic is, well, you know, a pandemic.
If they're then going to accuse white people of being racist or negligent of the black community's needs, if they're going to make the case for why the country or certain states should not reopen because the black people are being disproportionately affected by coronavirus, then we can throw out these kinds of things too. Well, maybe they're holding really big house parties and barbecues and crawfish boils, and that's maybe what's spreading the coronavirus around faster. I don't know. I would think that would be the case, but what do y'all think?
First of all, she says she would think. This is a blatant lie, as she has just proven herself incapable of engaging in that sort of cerebral activity. She can speculate. She speculates real good, especially when it comes to barbecues and crawfish boils. Jesus, I hope Michael Harriott over at The Root gets hold of this. He's going to have a field day, if he hasn't already. Holy smokes. But we need to understand something here. There is a decidedly, and we've already had it proven, because they're marching around with their swastikas and their Confederate flags and their urine-colored snake flags, which is just a stand-in for the Confederate flag. There's a decidedly racist element to the reopen movement. Part of the reason they want to reopen, part of the reason that they want that they want people to be compelled back into forced labor situations in which slaughterhouses become a stand-in for death camps, is because they think it the white supremacists, the racists, the Nazis, etc. They think that it benefits them in the long term. Because it manages to whiten up America a little bit more. Oh, my God. But it's a fact. And it's spreading like a disease. James in Illinois says, parties, otherwise known as eating. Ron in Raleigh says, willful slavery. Some of our kinkier friends will willfully enslave themselves to a master or mistress in a B&D relationship or an S&M relationship. I know this is outside your experience, but it does happen. I don't think that, but is that 24/7? I mean, is that irrevocable? If there's a child conceived in that, does the child become, see? It gets complicated real quick, Ron. God damn it. But not too long before airtime, there's a big stink in right wingistan now, where they claim that doctors is being censored because they got a different kind of scientific view of the Roner. because YouTube pulled a couple of bullshit videos featuring a couple of doctors who are just sitting there blathering away and have not submitted any papers, have not submitted for any peer review, just arguing that everything we think we know about the Trump virus is wrong. And so, because they are unbelievably, breathtakingly stupid, they sent out a sort of a press release, whatever thingy. And because I get right-wing bullshit on a regular basis, one Todd Wilcox, no, really, because the goddess of irony is paying attention, sent me something titled "The Full," paren, all caps, "Censured," close paren, "Press Conference with Dr. Erickson and Dr. Masihi." Censured. Not censored, which is what these dead from the neck up white wing trolls meant, but can't spell. But censured, as if there'd been a vote in a legislative body somewhere to say naughty, naughty to them for spreading this this eugenic filth. This is the kind of an anti-vax bleed over into an attempt to get more people all dead. Oh, thank you very kindly for letting me know, Jude. Jude's contribution to closing out April, she says, is for Charlie. May he be surrounded by attuned and gifted medical staff, caring for his each and every need. Thank you, Jude. Your spirit of goodness and your soul of contemplation and dignity. Well, I don't know many like you. You are special in ways that I would be challenged to achieve. Thank you, Jude. Billable Rick, white power brunette. That hateful woman is engaging in typical victim-blaming behavior. The only things she didn't use were references to watermelons, those people, and fried chicken. What is fucking wrong with that broadcaster? I want to know. How can any sane person listen to this drivel? Shaking my head. Well, Billable Rick, therein lies the trick. Sane people don't listen. They don't. I've got a perfect example. It is the story of 37-year-old Jessica Prim, as in prim and proper. Jessica Prim, 37 years old, was arrested yesterday in New York City. She's not from New York City. She just went to New York City, carrying a bunch of knives of an illegal nature. The reason she was carrying the knives was because she was on a mission to kill Joe Biden. And when she was arrested, well, there was video of the arrest. You know, that whole anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law thing. One suspects that's in play here. As she was arrested, she began to weep. The Daily Beast identifies her as a dancer. She claimed in a loud voice to be a dancer, but I don't think she'd cut a rug in years, listens to the jukebox for her answers, and slowly guzzles 25-cent beers. That's from Jimmy Buffett's Woman Going Crazy on Caroline Street. Well, she wasn't going crazy on Caroline Street. She was going crazy on a city pier in New York City. And when the cops came to arrest her for carrying knives, she was trying to get close to the hospital ship Comfort, which has since departed New York Harbor. She was trying to get close to the Comfort, and she looked at the cops and said, "Have you guys heard about the kids? Okay, I'm not lying." And she'd gone to Facebook to say that Hillary Clinton and Biden need to be taken out. Hillary Clinton and her assistant Joe Biden and Tony Podesta need to be taken out in the name of Babylon. I can't be set free without them gone. Wake me up! And then as she was being arrested, she informed the folks that were arresting her that Donald J. Trump, the J stands for clairvoyant, was communicating directly to her, no mention here of whether it's through her aluminum foil hat or the fillings in her teeth, during his shit show of an evening. And she's in it deep now. There's more than a dozen counts of criminal possession of a weapon about the knives. It means there was a dozen knives. And, well, I can't agree with this because I think I think of this as being superfluous. They also busted her for possession of marijuana. Hint. The marijuana didn't make her think that Donald Trump was communicating directly to her through the bolts in her neck or whatever. But upon perusing her Facebook page, turns out that she's a big, 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 big believer in QAnon. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she subscribes to the idea that Joe Biden and Hillary Clinton are cannibal pedophiles. And she thinks there's just clues all over the place. And she thinks there's a secret video out there of Hillary Clinton and Huma Abedin murdering a child. And the QAnon goonies have gone so far as to cook up this notion that the hospital ship Comfort was being used to rescue, and this comes with quotes, mole children who had been sexually abused by the cabal. It only gets... Wait, time out. I know this is... Jesus. So the pier she was walking on in New York City, where she thought she was going up to the hospital ship Comfort, no. She was approaching the USS Intrepid, an aircraft carrier. And everybody knows that aircraft carriers look just like hospital ships. Yeah. So now we've got bizarreness on both coasts. You might recall that the other hospital ship, when it docked in Los Angeles, had a train engineer try to drive his train into the ship, hollering, "People have to know!" Brother Deacon Asa says, "The QAnon thing is a disturbing trend. How long before a plurality of law enforcement believe in it and stop arresting lunatics like this one. Billable Rick says, crazy woman with knives. The nutso lady in New York City with knives who was carrying on about Biden and Hillary killing children obviously went to the wrong location to exact her revenge. As we all know, Comet Ping Pong Pizza joint in Washington, D.C., in the basement thereof, and it doesn't have a basement, is where Hillary killed and ate all of those babies in the basement, which, again, does not exist. Steve in New York observes, subject line, mental health. Seems to me that were this a country that cared about its citizenry, this woman would be receiving treatment. It's possible she has. The trouble with treatment is that you have to keep on treating. And it's a known known within the mental health community that when you get someone on a medication therapy, the real trick is for them to stay on that medication therapy. Like I said, it's a rather busy-ish Thursday. And we're not into the heart of the matter yet. No, no. Just as a sort of a by the way, Mike Pencilneck Geek has finally figured out how to wear a mask. While he was unwilling to wear one at the Mayo Clinic, you know, where there are sick people, he did visit a facility in Talibandiana today, you know, his natal state, where he was once governor and ignored an outbreak of HIV that burned up a county there. No, he went to Kokomo today. Little place called Kokomo. That's where Mike Pence, he wanted to go. That's singing twice today. But he and chinless Mitch McConnell's beard, I mean wife, Elaine Chao, toured a factory in Kokomo alongside General Motors CEO Mary Barra, whom Donald J. Trump, the J stands for misogynist, despises. But this time through, having received no small amount of deserved grief for his flagrant refusal to wear a mask, and you'll recall he complained that he couldn't wear a mask at the Mayo Clinic because he wanted to look the doctors in the eye, which apparently meant that he hadn't figured out that whole business of how to put on a mask. Both he and Elaine Chao wore a mask. Hers was a fashionable print, I might add. And so they were touring this factory where they're making ventilators in Kokomo. And so now, he has to go back to Washington. I imagine he's already there, where Donald J. Trump, the J stands for genius, will give him a wedgie and a swirly and call him a pussy because he put on a mask. After the whole Mayo Clinic fiasco, Pence's wife, you'll recall her name is Karen, of course. Today, she said that only after he left the Mayo Clinic did he learn that they had a policy about everybody having to wear a mask. Never mind the fact that it was plastered all over the hospital, and they'd even gone to the trouble of announcing that he was coming there and that, yes, he would be required to wear a mask, and then, of course, they were required to delete that tweet because he's Mike Pence, and he doesn't do anything. He doesn't have to do anything that he doesn't hear a voice in his head claiming to be Jesus telling him to do. That's right. He hid behind his wife's skirts. Couldn't even speak for himself. Clorox Claudius declared today that we're going to have a vaccine just lickety-split. Whatever you can humanly do, we're going to have. I hope we're going to have a vaccine, and we're going to fast-track it like you've never seen. We're calling it Operation Warp Speed. Now, this White House It's Operation Derp Speed. And he went on to say, when they said, well, okay, okay, there, your Clorox Claudiousness, who's in charge of Operation Derp Speed? I mean, Warp Speed.
You know who's in charge of it? I am. I'm the one who gets blamed.
These are quotes.
I'm the one who gets blamed.
See, if we have to listen to him, it's a lot easier to listen to my stupid impression of him than actually listening to the audio of him, isn't it?
You know who's going to in charge of it? I am. I'm the one who gets blamed.
And see, this is the difference between making a president of a member of a moneyed wealth class family, patrician family, and that patrician president says success has 1,000 fathers. Failure is an orphan. That was John Fitzgerald Kennedy. Moneyed, educated, erudite, brave, bold, courageous.
I'm the one who gets blamed.
That's a nouveau riche, jumped up, grasping, money grubbing, climber son of a Klansman.
I'm the one who gets blamed. It's always me. I'm always being blamed.
And so the goal of Operation Derp Speed is to have 100 million doses of the coronavirus vaccine ready by the end of 2020. Shh. That's never going to happen. For a variety of reasons. Not the least of which is that these are the assholes who told us that we'd have tens of millions upon tens of millions of coronavirus tests. And yet, to this moment, we are per capita behind most of the civilized world. Here in West Virginia, we've got a population of roughly 1.7 million people. We have tested a little more than 44,000 of them, which is maybe 2.5%. Maybe. And the numbers are similar in other states. And the maggots know that it's similar. That's why, for instance, Florida state government has banned or forbidden, and it's no surprise considering what they've done with other scientific data in the past. You remember under the governorship of Rick Skeletor Scott, all state employees were forbidden from saying the word climate change or sea level rise or something to that effect. They were forbidden from actually acknowledging the consensus science on the changing nature of the climate on this planet, the changing nature of which points toward a not too distant future when this planet may very well be too hot and miserable for the human species to continue to live on it. Yeah. Well, now, medical officials, coroners and the like, are forbidden from disclosing the numbers of people who die in Florida from the Rona. Because that's the only way that they can justify engaging in the eugenic stupidity that is reopening without even a passing regard for whether or not their numbers are declining. Because remember, the first gatepost or gateway or whatever of the Trump regime is that you need 2 weeks of declining numbers of diagnosis. Not 2 weeks of flat numbers, certainly not 2 weeks of increasing numbers, but 2 weeks of declining numbers before you can let the first eager soul into a strip joint or a nail salon. Georgia, for instance, where Brian Kemp, the racist election thief, serves as governor, well, they don't have even flat, let alone declining numbers, But by God, movie theaters and bowling alleys and strip joints and the Mooses and the Elkstuses and the Odd Fellers and the Knights of Pythorus and all of that. Well, they're open. Yep. You can go get your nails and your hair did. And take your life into your own hands in the process. But they do not care. They're going to open one way or another. Because the goal, of course, is to avoid, at all costs, letting loose of unemployment money. Because, among other places, in Iowa, that godforsaken Republican governor woman has declared that if a business is reopened and you don't go back to work, you don't get no unemployment insurance. So the last thing that the working class has by way of leverage, i.e. the ability, the right to withhold their labor, has been threatened so that families will have to decide whether or not they want mommy to go on living and daddy to go on living, or whether they want them to go back to work. Jesus. Told you it was going to be a busy Thursday. Ron in Raleigh says, this just goes to show people on the right are absolutely bug nuts. I don't recall hearing about a lot of folks on the left espousing ideas as around the bend as some of these commonly held beliefs of the right wing. Consider the fact that people can hear this loony shit and not think to themselves that these folks are crazy. P.S. Mother Pence is a beard as well. Mitch isn't the only one with one. Well, now, didn't that just put an image in my head that I could have gone the rest of my life without seeing it? Thanks for the sour persimmons, brother. James in Illinois says, they moved the ship, the Comfort, yesterday. It's a plot. And Hillary and Biden were tipped off, so they're gone too. And, of course, the children had all been eaten. Perfect. Honestly, to those of you who are my age, well, north of 50, as you were growing up, did you ever think you were going to hear anything as turkey trot crazy as what we've been subjected to? And I'm still working toward the real lunacy. Because, to use the phrase that Ron just put forward, the bug nuts were busy in Lansing, Michigan today. Hundreds of urine-colored snake flag waving, grunting, growling, hooting, barking, white people. I mean, I'm looking at a photo of them in their pressed down and shaken together mass there in the capital of the state of Michigan. There are not any people of color in that group. They went into the Capitol. They're all pressed up together and smollicking around and rubbing on each other and LARPing and tossling of each other hair and freedom, brother. It's in the Constitution. It's in the Constitution, right there next to where it says life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It's in the Constitution. And so once it started raining outside, they didn't want to be outside in the rain anymore because they're afraid of the rain, but they're not afraid of the Rona. So they congregated inside the capital of the state of Michigan, which will now have to be fucking fumigated. And they stood outside the House of Representatives chamber chanting, let us in, grunt, let us in, hoot, let us in, woof, let us in. Demanding that Gretchen Whitmer let them mow their snow. And here's one, and because, you know, so much damage has already been done to our body politic. These ignorant, deadly, disease-bearing yahoos actually walked into the capital of the state of Michigan grunting and hooting, and carrying firearms. Senator Dana Palanki, a Democrat from Livonia, said, "Directly above me, men with rifles yelling at us. Some of my colleagues who own bulletproof vests are wearing them. I have never appreciated our sergeants at arms more than today." And you know what didn't happen? Even with these monsters menacing public governance, civil governance, with their firearms, not one of them got their brains blown out by law enforcement. And see, they think that they're going to exert pressure on Governor Whitmer because there are two pieces of legislation at work in this situation. Michigan has an Emergency Powers of Governor Act of 1945 that says that the governor can declare a state of emergency and the legislature can go pound sand if they don't like it. On the other hand, the Emergency Management Act of 1976 requires legislative approval to continue. So what will probably happen is the state of emergency will remain in effect because it doesn't look like Gretchen Whitmer has a hell of a lot of back down in her. But the Republican-controlled legislature may insist upon lifting the stay-at-home order so that people in Michigan, many of them minorities of various origin, will die. And if you ever wanted pure, unvarnished proof that the maggots are a white supremacy movement, this is it. Among that gang of grunting and groaning Neanderthals, which is probably unfair to the Neanderthals, well, there was a guy named Ryan Kelly. And he said, "Raise your hands if you've been economically impacted by the stay-home order." And all the little maggots grunted and squatted and hooted and raised their hands. And he went on and said, "The solution is worse than the problem. We've elected a governor who has put us into an economic downward spiral." If that dumb bastard voted for Gretchen Whitmer, I will eat my Docksider boat shoes. Meanwhile, outside, they were circling in their automobiles. People were standing outside with signs that say things like, "Freedom is essential. It's in the Constitution, right next to where it says life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." When they show up in the Capitol with guns, how is that not deemed an armed insurrection? How is that not an act of open warfare? Livonia, Michigan, pronounced Livonia, says Brother Deacon Asa. "Come on, Bob, haven't you seen the jewelry exchange ads?" This chat just kind of goes to show how little television I actually watch. The only ad that's stuck in my head right now is the one where I think it was Novo Nordisk ruined a perfectly good one-hit wonder pop song, and I can no longer hear, "Oh, ho, ho, it's magic, you know." That's three songs this evening. This has got to, thank God April's almost over. But no, I got to hear, "Oh, oh, oh, Ozempic." Fuckers. And if you see, Sparky sent along one of the photographs from Michigan of a guy, you know, with like Confederate chin whiskers, hooting and howling and grunting and shrieking. This was an armed mob. But, you know, they were white, so not so much as a molecule of tear gas. On the other hand, indigenous people at Standing Rock, they get in the way of a pipeline. Shit! They're lucky to be alive. They were arrested, held interminably in jail, accused of terrorism when not one of them menaced anybody with a gun. But these assholes show up, and because of their white skin and their white privilege, they don't get so much as a goddamn ticket. Yeah, right there is the end of any claim that white privilege does not exist. David in South Carolina, Stan, pointing out, one of these days, one of these cosplayers is going to start shooting. Yes, they are. And I'll bet you even then the cops won't shoot back. Yeah, I agree. Jeff on the left says, Bob, these people are living proof of people being willfully fucking stupid. I didn't know about that. I'll have to look into that, Bob. Didn't have anything to do with it. Meanwhile, Jeff on the left says, Mike Pencilneck Geek won't mind being called a pussy by a Donnie dipshit. I've seen the way Pence looks longingly at Donnie. Now maybe the Donald will grab the puss like Mikey's always wanted him to. Jimmy in the Great Northwest wants to know, Operation Warp Speed to be delivered by Space Force? Yeah, why not? Why the hell not? No, I won't, Billable. I just damn won't. Since you're doing so well with your singing tonight, is there any way that you can cue up some Pat Boone metal? Just asking for a friend. That is no friend. No friend at all. And I wanted to share something with you coming out of Illinois. I got this. I didn't get it as soon as I should have. I didn't really know it was out there. But I did eventually notice it. And it comes to us from Naomi. Naomi wrote and said, I was listening to your podcast last night, and you had mentioned the lawsuit against J.B. Pritzker in Illinois. I've lived in Illinois all my life. I just wanted to say on this subject that I don't know why people think they're better than everybody else. Let's throw a fit. Anyway, the main thing was that I work for Head Start in Champaign County. I'm a teacher of children 6 weeks to 3 years old. I've been off work for 2 months so far, and Pritzker extended till May. And who knows, could go into June, which is fine by me and my co-teacher and our co-workers. We go into work when school starts, and of course kids share germs and end up with runny noses, coughing and sneezing on us. I'm a nervous wreck if they tell me it's time to go back. I have a couple of family members that have low immune systems. I can't take that chance of anyone getting the virus. I won't be comfortable until CDC or someone who knows something says it's okay. I'm neither for or against Pritzker, but I think he's trying to keep Illinois people safe. They say that Illinois won't hit peak until Naomi says mid-March. I think she meant maybe, given the reference to the suit against Pritzker, maybe mid-May or so, depending. Shoot, we're getting paid to be off. I know it all isn't, but a lot of companies are making sure that there aren't late fees on bills or even no payments. But this is my two cents on the subject. Thank you much for taking time to read it. You're more than welcome, Naomi, and thank you very kindly for sharing that with us. So if you're in Illinois, you're protected. You're protected against these wild-eyed homicidal reopenings. But if you work in a slaughterhouse in Iowa, the back-to-work order may as well be a death warrant signed by the governor. The viciousness is never-ending. Witness the Planning Commissioner Chair Ken Turnage II of Antioch, California. Ken Turnage II is, of course, a good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist maggot. And he's ready to attend some funerals. Ken Turnage is. Because it'll be the right funerals. He described the Trump pandemic as being like a forest fire that consumes, quote, old trees, fallen brush, and scrub shrub sucklings. And says that we will be stronger as a society, when the pandemic is all settled, in his words. You know, Arbeit macht frei and all that. He's a glass half full kind of guy, Ken Turnage. We would have significant loss of life. See how I'm not giving anybody a southern accent this evening? I can learn. We would have significant loss of life. We would lose many elderly that would reduce burdens in our defunct social security system. Healthcare costs, once the wave subsided, make jobs available for others, and it would also free up housing in which we are in dire need of, Turnage said, having apparently never had even a ninth grade class in basic English grammar. Yet we would lose a large portion of the people with immune and other health complications. I know it would be loved ones as well, but that would once again reduce our impact on medical, jobs, and housing. Folks who read that when he posted it on Facebook didn't take too kindly to it, because they may have sensed that he was talking about it being okay for their loved ones to die so that we can live in a post-COVID Republican libertarian wonderland. And I just have to ask that question. Why are libertarians such dicks? Why would you say that out loud, even if you thought it? The hell is wrong with people? God almighty. But this is a classic case of what Maya Angelou taught. When they tell you who they are, believe them. Which is corollary to what the late coach Dennis Green said. They were who we thought they were. So here we are at the top of the second hour, and our buddy Dan Fisher has waited patiently for about 4 minutes now. Hey, Dan.
Hey, how am I sounding this time?
You sound fantastic.
Can you hear me?
You sound marvelous.
Oh, Okay, well first, before I do anything else, let's get this out of the way. Oh, happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary.
Thank you.
You know that one, right?
Yes, thank you very kindly, Fred.
That's the Flintstones. Yes, the Flintstones anniversary song. But, you know, I'm waiting patiently to go on. And who do you reference right before I go on to supposedly spread gems of knowledge and wisdom? You quote Maya Angelou. So it's like Jimmy Page does a solo. Okay, now we're going to bring out Danny Fisher with this new guitar that he just bought last week.
At the pawn shop.
I mean, even Dennis Green is far more genius level than I could ever aspire. My genius level would be spelled with the letter J. But good show tonight so far.
Well, thank you.
I'm enjoying.
I'm feeling like it's pretty adequate tonight, Dan.
You could go to that C plus level if you really applied yourself, as teachers might have told either one of us, I'm sure, at times in our lives. You need to apply yourself, Bob. Just a little effort.
I know. It's a matter of self motivation, Dan. You know that.
Listen. I will praise you right here and now. In that you are willing to do something these days, which I'm having a harder and harder time to do, and that is to actually read the effing news every day. I mean, to just go past headlines and actually see what they're saying, because every day it's a head thumper. It's really down to, oh my God, what did he say today? And oh my God, what are they actually doing? You know, he is, of course, we all know who he who shall not be named, and then they is freaking everybody else. Why are these people going to beaches? Why are people, you know, with guns walking into state capitals proclaiming freedom, but yet they're afraid of rain? You know, it's all just nuts. And I like to say I love humanity. It's people I can't stand. And boy, oh boy, you know, that is being put to the test.
Yeah, that's corollary to the old line attributed to Gandhi. I like your Christ. I do not like your Christians. They're so unlike your Christ.
Yeah. Yeah. So, wow, what is today? Not Throwback Thursday. You call it Thorn in the Thigh Thursday.
Yeah, the Thorn in the Thigh Thursday.
Oh, brother. I'm off to. Can I just start over? This isn't live.
Hi,
is it?
Hey, it's Dan. Hey, how you doing, Dan?
Let's just rewind the tape. Let's take out that Maya Angelou stuff and let's pretend that I thought her up. Okay.
Okay. So you say, you know, Bob, it's like Maya Angelou said.
My old pal Maya Angelou said. Don't believe everything you see on the internet.
And stay out of the comments.
Oh my God, yes. And that's where I got into trouble last weekend after Clorox Gate. You know, you and I both have friends who are true believers. Well, you're from Alabama. I'm originally from West Virginia. And I have a lot of friends from there. And listen, I have MAGA friends from all over the country, not just the Mountain State, but they are especially concentrated if they're either still living there or at least from there.
Not to be confused with their ability to concentrate. Yes, I understand.
Yeah. So, listen, I have many wonderful, smart friends who still live there, and I don't know how they do it. I don't know how they have the patience to be surrounded by so many people who just will not accept truth when truth is truth. But anyway, so I had a friend on ye old Facebook who posted something or other rather statistical and scientific in nature about why it was not wise to inject disinfectants into the human body. And because she is from West Virginia, and so I went there to look at the comments. I should have turned around like Lot's wife, lest I be cast into a pillar of salt. And of course, the comments were attacking her viciously. I mean, she was practically being called a communist on her own page. And I just started replying with data. I'm always careful in my comments never to use adjectives. I try to use as many nouns as possible. And to remember the Michelle Obama quote about when they go low, you go high. Not that it does me any world of good. Not that the world itself is doing any much better because I choose to engage with people who just will not accept things that I believe should be obvious to anybody with more than eighth grade education. That being said, among the many things I had to point out was that disinfectants and antibiotics are not the same thing. It is true that scientists and doctors have disinfected, that doctors have injected antibiotics or given to their patients through orally or other means for decades now, and that yes, those things can have healing properties, but antibiotics do not quote unquote clean out the system, and they are not to be confused with disinfectants, which are always meant to be applied externally. Folks, externally. Yes, it is true that, yes, doctors do use antiseptics when treating their patients, but externally. And then there was one person who insisted that doctors do use hydrogen peroxide internally, and I did a little more research on that. And there are some, but not many, and certainly not accepted within the medical community, doctors who believe that hydrogen peroxide could have a positive effect on treating cancer patients when applied internally. Many doctors, and in fact our own FDA, disagreed with those conclusions over 10 years ago. That being said, we know that the internet has created many amateur doctors, self-appointed epidemiologists. And so all we can do, listen, I don't encourage any of your listeners, and I do try to discourage myself from engaging in rhetoric online with those who will refuse to accept science as something of a fact rather than an opinion.
Well, however, is that old adage about not casting pearls before swine, Dan.
But every once in a while, Bob, I just have to get in there and at least try to counter what seems to be obvious misinterpretations of truth, if not outright bold-faced rat-fucking lies. To at least say, well, if Trump didn't say this, well, here's his words. Yeah, but he didn't mean them. Well, you know, he didn't say to drink Clorox, or he just said to look into it. Well, here he is standing in front of a chart, which shows that the two disinfectants he just suggested looking into, because that's always his thing, looking into injecting internally were isopropyl alcohol and bleach. So, yeah, don't do that. Really. I mean, you and I might disagree about everything politically, but I really, honest to God, don't want you to poison yourself with injecting or drinking bleach or isopropyl alcohol. Those are big no-nos, always have been, always should be. But, you know, this does bring about the whole metaphor of drinking the Kool-Aid, right? Because both sides of the political fence have forever lobbed that one out, at least since the days of Jim Jones. Oh, you're drinking, you know, Obama got you to drink the Kool-Aid. Oh, you're drinking the Kool-Aid again. Well, this is the first time where people are literally drinking disinfectants. They are drinking Clorox. They are trying to drink Lysol. Here in New York, in New York City, supposedly the most sophisticated and, you know, literate place perhaps in the entire United States, there were 30 cases within 18 hours of Trump's little demonstration, the one that he later claimed was being sarcastic. So, I don't know. Words matter, right? Words can hurt, and they can kill you. The thing that he, you know, the famous quote of, well, I could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and get away with it. Well, this is kind of just, they're just not literal bullets. They're biological bullets that he's loading up and shooting out there. You know, every day it's a misinformation upon a misinformation, or let's just call a lie when we hear one, right? And yet there are people that will always, they just simply always will take the, if he says it, it's true, or he didn't really say it, or he didn't mean it that way. It's just always going to be that way, and I am old man yelling at the clouds when I engage with such people. Are you still there?
I am. I'm trying not to interrupt you because you're sitting there, laying down a base coat of factuality. And if there's one observation I would make out of this, it is that you used that, at least in this era, dangerous word, Dan. You used the word truth. Mm-hmm. Because we live in an era of one man's nightshirt is another man's pajamas. And so I've always been, well, for my adult life, I've been careful with that word truth. Because, well, it goes back to an old one-liner about the death of Socrates, where Socrates is standing there, he's just drunk the cup and just sat it down, and he looks at all of his followers and says, all these years, Socrates, what is truth? Socrates, what is beauty? Never once did you say, Socrates, hemlock is poison.
That's good. That's a good joke.
So, truth, to me, it has an unintellectual quality to it.
Maybe the better word to interrupt you, and God knows you did not interrupt me, maybe the better word can be data. Because listen, we all avoid truth. Every one of us, every day, if we don't outright lie, we don't always at least say what is true. If they're unpleasant things, we avoid them in conversation and in our own heads.
Well, it's kind of a bit more of a mouthful, but I go for the word or the phrase objectively factual.
Go on. Expand, please.
Even if you're convinced that he did not say what you heard him saying,
mm-hmm.
even if you're convinced that he didn't say what you saw him say, we can at least start on with the groundwork of objective factuality that bleach is poison. Not once did any of you say, Socrates, hemlock is poison. Bleach is poison. Lysol's poison. Putting your 1970s black light lava lamp up your ass is deleterious to human health.
Right.
And that's just a good way, Dan, to find out if there's going to be any future to the conversation in which you're engaged.
I guess I just pine for the days when truth itself was not considered so objective. And that's perhaps why I still cling to not the idea of not using an adjective before the word truth, because then you could also say alternative truth. That's another way of looking. I still would maybe think in this post-Trumpian time of introducing the term data into our language as what had once been considered by all common sense or just plain old truth, objective or otherwise, that the earth is round. You know, yes, Mr. Yuck is mean. Mr. Yuck is green. These are things that we learned as children. And we came to accept them, and we lived good lives by knowing that Mr. Yuck was green, and that means when you see him, stop and think, do not smell, do not drink, do not touch, do not eat, or you will be sick. And now, last week, I had to convince over and over, well, I didn't convince, but I attempted to convince women, it was all women, by the way, too, in their 40s and 50s, that Mr. Yuck was mean and green, do not smell, do not touch, do not eat, do not drink disinfectants. That the president was off on this one, folks. You may agree with him about the stupid wall. You may agree with him about his supposed turnaround of the economy that Obama supposedly destroyed somehow, that we don't remember except you. But we should all be able to agree that you should not touch, smell, eat, or drink disinfectants, nor should they be injected into the body, and nor, especially while scientists are hard at work on, you know, they're devoting all of their time and all of these resources to a vaccine or an antibiotic that can get rid of this thing, that to look into, because he's always asking us to look into whatever far-fetched theory came off on Fox and Friends, to look into this, Well, that's going to take away the time and money we spend on the things that are actually real. And, you know, one supposed Facebook friend replied, well, you know, listen, we spent all those millions of dollars on the so-called impeachment, and look where that got us. It's like, okay, that's a side issue. We're not going to go there. But just remember this. We do not have unlimited funds for this any more than we have unlimited scientists or unlimited in the hours of the day for the scientists to actually do their work. So, no. Don't do those things. And please accept that sometimes the president just wings it, and oftentimes he wings it wrongly. And it's not a good idea to muse out loud these things on such a public forum. Maybe if you really have those ideas, Mr. President, just say them in a closed room to scientists who can then persuade you that it's a nut job of an idea. So, you remember Mr. Yuck, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Bob, did you ever
I even remember the other warning avatar who came before Mr. Yuck.
Who was that? I might have missed that one.
Patch the Pony?
We did not have Patch the Pony in the Northern Ohio Valley area.
I think maybe his time had come and gone by then. But if I recall correctly, Patch the Pony had to do with not getting in the car or taking candy from strangers.
Mm.
And Patch the Pony says, nay, nay, stay away.
And was he related to Timmy the Turtle, who told you to duck and cover when the bomb fell?
He may have been.
At least shared the barn. He must have shared the barn.
He may have been next after Timmy.
Mm. Timmy had a, you know, he got a little too close to the Yucca Flats, and he didn't, his end wasn't good.
You know what? Maybe that's why part of our problems now, Dan, a certain generation of children were raised to listen to a talking turtle, and now look who's the Senate Majority Leader.
That is quick. That is quick. A turtle reference. I was going to say they listened to a Kardashian, but you did me better with the turtle reference. Thank you.
Yeah, I try. I mean, I do pay attention. I love these conversations.
Oh, it's your name on the show, Bob. I'm just passing through on my way to Albuquerque. Pismo Beach. Here I come.
Here we are, Pismo Beach, and all the clams we can eat.
Pismo Beach, yes, with the lisp. But how the heck are you, by the way?
You know, getting along. I mean, it's like I said before, Dan. It's not that much different right now. I mean, I can't go to the bowling alley, but I never go to the bowling alley. I miss being able to go and hear some live music. I miss that badly. I miss the camaraderie of my friends, but my family is safe. My family is well. And if it would ever stop raining, we could go out and play in the yard, and we'd be we would sit out in the sunshine in the grass and count our blessings as compared to people who can't even leave their apartments.
Yeah. Yeah.
It could be manifestly worse than it is here, so long as we don't have the Rona. But there is. How do I put this? And I'm not complaining.
You better not complain.
I would like to talk about something besides this godforsaken plague, because I feel like, and I think I've referenced this play with you before. I feel like I'm one of the inmates down there in the nether reaches of that French prison, and we're all just getting ready to put on Marat sod.
Ooh, that's good.
Because everybody, to one degree or another, is a little whoop with all of this. I mean, just because the normal decent people who don't walk around grunting and waving urine-colored snake flags, just because we don't do that doesn't mean we're all hunky-dory with being in the situation we're in. It's a mindset difference.
Yeah.
It's a willingness on our part to accept some inconvenience. Because, again, I'll go back to what I said before. This is not my parents' generation pulling the blackout curtains every night and wondering if a Nazi Zeppelin was going to come overhead and, you know, bomb the coal mines in Fayette County, West Virginia.
Right.
I mean, they lived like that.
My mom did too.
They weren't being paranoid. It was a possibility. And blackout curtains in New York City and Wilmington, North Carolina and Miami Beach because of German subs lurking off the coast, and the same thing for Japanese subs off the West Coast. And we're these snowflake little pissants are throwing a conniption over golf courses?
Well, did you
docks? Really?
Who was it? You probably know. I bet you can say it. There was a politician, maybe from, was it Nebraska? Somewhere who likened social isolation to being put in the cattle cars during the Holocaust. Did you see that one?
Yeah, oh, yeah. I think I had that in the last couple of days.
You probably did, right? But, you know, let's just point out, you know, the
it damned well wasn't. It isn't.
Yeah. And you know, even some, I have very little patience for complaining, and I try never to make it, especially these days, make it a part of my conversation. Just because, yeah, I go to that place in my head of, it could always be worse, right? There's always somebody worse off from you. And as a refresher course to perhaps some newbies in your audience, I am the survivor of a heart transplant going on a year and a half into the second year this September. And, you know, whenever I have had people praise me for having that done as if I were the one that self-operated, but I've had people say, oh, you know, so whatever, brave and all that. And I'm not being falsely humble here at all. I'm legitimately humble because it's like, look, I didn't have cancer. I know for 100% of a fact that chemo is something I would much rather less go through than what I did. You know, yeah, you know, you go into a heart transplant knowing there is a possibility of death, but on the other hand, you have I had the best surgeons in the world, and et cetera. So I worried, but I didn't worry. You know, and I feel that way now. It's like I worry, but I don't worry. I don't look out the window every day and think, well, this is it. This is as far as it all goes. I believe we will come back from this. You know, I know things are going to change a lot, and I'm going to have to adapt to that a lot. But I will, and I can, you know. And if I can't, and I won't, I mean, what am I going to do about it? You know, if another virus comes in beyond that, and is even worse, what am I going to do about it? All I can do is what I know I'm supposed to do. And if I'm not successful, then that's it. You know, I've had a good one, and I'm happy to have gotten what I got. But at the same time, yeah, I wear a mask. Yeah, I use hand sanitizer. Guess what? I've been doing that since I came out of the hospital in September of 2018. You know, and for a while, I was mysterious when I wore a mask in public. I was a figure of question. But now, if I don't, I'm mysterious and a figure of question. So more often than not, I do, if I even go out at all, which is rare. So I am a person that likes his books. You know. Oh, go ahead.
No. You like your books? You like your movies?
I like my books. I like my movies. I like to write. I'm grinding away at the second draft of this novel in really good fashion now because I've got time. You know, and so that's what I can control. I can control the time I have every day. And I try not to. Well, I try to waste it, too, because, you know, I'm not going to have that wastable time when I do go back to work. I'm going to have to be more of a grown up. For now, if I want to take a nap at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm taking a nap. Nobody can blame me.
I'm just curious. Are your days and nights affected? I mean.
Oh, holy cow. Yeah, there is no day. And there is no. The only thing that tells me there's a day and a night is the sun. And that
we don't even have that here.
Well, I mean, it's cloudy today looking out the window. The sun isn't quite set here in New York. But look, I also have on my phone, I've got the alarm set for four times a day, 9 a.m., 1 p.m., 5 p.m., and 9 p.m. to take medications. And I'm going to have those alarms set on whatever iPhone I possess for the rest of my life. So, yeah, those are markers to me of time. But days, forget – what does it matter, days? Saturday? Okay. Weekend, huh? What are your plans for the weekend? Well, the same as today, yesterday, last week. They're all the same day. It's an episode of Law and Order. You know, little details change, but the general plot and structure are the same.
This is almost hunter-gatherer-ish. In the time before the development of calendars, it's, you know, the seasons make more difference than the day-to-day.
Oh, yeah. And listen, when it comes to hunting and gathering, I don't know about you, but I've never talked about food as much in my life. What food are we going to eat? Where are we going to get the food? We can't get that food. What other food could we settle for? Where could we find the food that we want but we can't get? You know, can we find curry powder anywhere? You know, and it's a lot of work has been put in this household into answering those questions. And we still talk about the food, who's making the food. You know, I'm home all the time, so I don't have an excuse now to go, well, geez, honey, I've had a hard day at work. I'm not making the food. Well, you know what? I got to make the food because she made it yesterday.
Are you any kind of a cook?
I've got my things. I've got my and plus, you know, low salt and all that stuff. I have a marvelous recipe for low sodium vegetable soup / stew, however thick you choose to make it. It's super and easy, and maybe I'll put it on your the Bob Kincaid website.
The Horn Family Community Congregation are noted consumers of food porn and would love to see that.
Okay, and maybe some of them have some issues. Their doctors have told them, hey, maybe you ought to cut down on salt a little bit. We all should, right? But salt is delicious. So is fat. So is sugar. Of course, we're going to gobble that stuff down. But, you know, here and there, yes, I have learned little tricks, little recipes to make things that don't taste like paper and yet are more or less salt free or low sodium.
I tell you what, we've become real fans of those pouches of pre-flavored tuna. Because it's a big
old... If I were a tuna fanatic, yeah, I would probably be the same.
No, we're not tuna fanatics. It's just rip it open, sink the fork in. Maybe you got a saltine or whatever. Doesn't matter. You don't have to. But if it's just like, oh, no, just eat some damn tuna.
And for us, it's the 5-pound jar of peanut butter. As long as you got that, you know, seemingly unlimited amount of peanut butter at your disposal, you're good. You know,
and if
it's
you,
protein,
and if you got,
it's,
if you
it's
got,
salty.
If you got a couple of bananas around, you put on some Elvis, you get the peanut butter, the banana.
It goes with everything, right?
Yeah.
You know, you can take those little bland rice cakes that have been sitting in your cabinet for months that you just won't eat because it is like eating paper. Put some peanut butter on that. You've got Thanksgiving dinner, baby.
Yeah, suddenly it's almost food.
It's almost food, that stuff, those rice cakes that nobody actually wants. But yet you keep buying because, you know, that is,
well, you know, it is
relatively healthy for you.
They are cheaper than packing peanuts when you need to send something in through the mails to a loved one.
Thank goodness I'm not yet thinking about eating the packing peanuts. You know, we've been doing well, you know, again, because I have a low immunity. I deliberately keep my immunity system down because as a heart transplant recipient, for the rest of my life, the concern will be, is the body rejecting the heart? And so the way to control that is to keep the immunity at such a level that, yes, if a germ comes through, my body will fight it to some degree.
Now, at no point in time was did your pharmacology ever include hydroxychloroquine, did it?
Heavens, no.
Okay.
Not at all.
Because it's so bad for the heart.
It is bad for the heart. And again, so is Lysol when injected internally. Internally. But so anyway, I do have immunity issues, and I see that some stores in our area have opened up their doors at special hours for those like myself and for senior citizens, people over in our area, at least defined as over the age of 60. That being said, I'm still wary, you know, and I applaud those efforts. I am lucky, and I accept that not everybody is so lucky to have options that I have, that I don't have to enter a store, nor does any member of my family, unless we choose to. We have a number of farm stands here in Rockland County that offer curbside delivery. I let them know when I'm there, and they come out, they put it in the trunk with their masks and their gloves, and I drive away without any bodily contact. It's already paid for through my credit card online or over a phone. And we just, by we, I mean my much more intelligent and charming wife, Helene, found a health food store within a 20-minute drive that does curbside delivery. And they have everything, not just what you'd buy at a farm stand, but yeah, they've got Cheerios or Healthios or whatever they call them. They have If You Care products of all sorts, dishwashing detergent and so forth. So we're getting by very well now. I had tried to do the Peapod thing, and I know I'm talking and talking and talking. I'll let you talk.
That's the purpose of this program, Dan. I mean, there's no video, so we can't make, you know, shadow box creatures or
Don't let me start singing Shadow Boxer by Fiona Apple. But anyway, I did try to
beat the hell out of me singing.
I will never beat the hell out of you. I'm sure you could beat the hell out of me if you ever were so inclined, which I don't think you'll ever be so. But speaking of that, or not speaking of that, so I did try some of the more mainstream sites, Peapod and Fresh Direct, and I got a slot on Peapod exactly once. And I bet your listeners could concur, at least some of them. The secret is you have to, first of all, be at the ready for a new slot to put it down at sometime between midnight and 1 a.m. every night. That's when the slots open up. But guess what? It's like getting tickets to a reunion of a Led Zeppelin show. They will sell out the very same minute. And I don't know if there are somehow people that have figured out the system better than I have. Yeah, I don't know what it is, but it's like it's available. No, it's not. Good luck tomorrow. And so it got very frustrating and literally exhausting for me to go that route. I hope that your listeners got better luck than me with those two usually very good sites.
Peapod, Instacart, none of that exists around here.
Yeah.
I mean,
and even in the Bronx, we have friends in the Bronx that they can't get delivery. So it's not just like out in the rural hinterlands. It's in the urban areas, too, where just some parts you can't get what you want. You can't always get what you want. Another song. But here, where I happen to be, I'm lucky. And again, it always comes back to with me, I'm lucky. So, no, I don't like complaints. I don't like to hear how hard it is that you've gone through all of the shows on Netflix and there's nothing new to watch. Who fucking who do you? You know, so...
Yeah. Now hold on a minute.
I got
to interrupt there because
yeah,
there is an entire universe of old movies, and you can
yes.
even theme up your nights. It was sub. My lovely wife and we will be
happy anniversary.
Yes, tomorrow, and she puts up with it. She puts up with a considerable amount of me picking movies that she would never pick. So. Couple of nights ago, it was World War II Submarine Night.
Mm.
And I'm here to tell you that Burt Lancaster and Clark Gable in Run Silent, Run Deep is a fine damn film.
Every movie I watch with Burt Lancaster, I love. Granted, he made like something like 160 movies. But I don't know if I've ever seen a bad Burt Lancaster movie. The man had
the actor who couldn't say no. Yeah.
Well, Michael Caine, on the other hand. But please go on.
No.
What was the other submarine movie? Did you? How about Das Boot? Did you watch Das Boot for the other?
No, we stay. I stayed.
The other fine people, as our president would call them.
Yep. Yeah. Wait a minute. You get a cowbell.
Hey.
No.
Are people donating money? By the way. It's never too early to remind them. Donate money to this show.
I am happy to announce that thanks to an anonymous friend, and thanks to Keith in Texas and his lovely wife of 28 years, We're done. We are done for the month of April. We are done.
Oh, but if they sent you money, you wouldn't refuse it, would you?
No, it's always a minimum number.
I mean, you could always send it to Daniel W. Fisher if you got too much money on your hands. Not that I'm complaining, because I hate complainers.
And
I'm
you
just
do.
Saying.
No, I'm sitting here trying to remember. So Run Silent, Run Deep is a South Pacific World War II submarine movie. And then there is a North Atlantic U.S. Navy destroyer commander versus a German U-boat commander movie. And I'm struggling to come up with it, but it's a fantastic piece of acting, too. And I'm seeing if I can... there it is. The Enemy Below.
The Enemy Below.
Yes.
I don't know that one.
Robert Mitchum and Kurt Juergens.
Kurt Juergens?
Yeah, Kurt Juergens. Wow. And that's
Bob Mitchum. You can't go wrong with Bob Mitchum.
No. And
little Bob.
And it's just,
I call him my best friend.
And so I watched a really, I'd never seen it. It was an adaptation of one of my favorite Raymond Chandler novels. And that is The Lady in the Lake. And I watched.
Bob Mitchum.
No, with Robert with Robert Montgomery. And he was in charge of it, and it was known at the time for the POV. Because it's shot entirely from behind Robert Montgomery's eyeballs. It is all his first person POV.
So you don't even see Robert Montgomery. You only hear his voice.
Yeah. And occasionally he'll look
and his hands.
Occasionally he'll look in a mirror.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. What's that one called again? That's going on the list.
The Lady in the Lake.
The Lady in the Lake. That sounds like that terrible M. Night Shyamalan movie, The Lady in the Swimming Pool, or whatever that one was called.
The Mermaid one.
Yeah.
No, this is nothing like that. And thank God. And it's got a couple of absolutely beautiful femmes fatale who never, you know, one of them became sort of a B movie scream queen, but she's the principal female in this movie. If you have any appreciation for that sense of style of the mid to late 40s, and of course it's L.A.
Of course.
And,
oh God, yeah.
No, you're gonna love this. It's not the greatest. It's certainly not Bogart and Bacall and The Big Sleep. But it proved to be I've just been going around and I don't know why I've been on World War. I know why I've been on World War II movies,
because you're turning into your father.
No, because of the very reason that I mentioned to you a few minutes ago. And that is, I'm looking back at a generation that actually did sacrifice, as opposed to a bunch of lily-livered pissants who think that not being able to go bowling somehow is an affront to their constitutional rights.
Or get a tattoo.
Yeah. Or go to the strip club.
Right. Well, I'll tell you one thing I watched recently, and I didn't intend for us to go into pop culture quite so early, but I'm cool with it. I'm down. But, you know, we decided to let go of our month-to-month HBO Now subscription. Save $10 a month. You know, why not? $10 adds up after a while, and we're in the middle of a pandemic. So we had until, like, April 5th before the subscription would run out. And I had yet seen the miniseries Chernobyl. And I was like, well, you know what? If I'm ever going to watch Chernobyl, it's during a pandemic and before the subscription runs out. So I did. Have you seen it?
No, I have not.
It's one of those ones you're, of course, because it's one of those shows, as soon as you hear about it, you're like, I don't know about this one. You know, do I really want to? Do I really? Should I? And it's you know what?
My lovely wife did some, and I mentioned this a couple of nights ago. I have never seen I Am Legend.
The which one? There were about 20 of them, right?
No, well, I mean the Will Smith version.
The Will Smith version.
I have a vague reminiscence of the Omega Man with Charlton Heston, but not enough to.
Right. Right. That's right.
But
that's
we started to watch that, and initially she was like, "Yeah, let's do." And we got about 45 minutes into it, and she's like, "No, I know what's coming, and you don't, and we're turning this off because because it's a little too real right now."
But let me tell you something about Chernobyl, the series, not the place, which I've never been to. But that show. Yeah, it sounds really depressing, and there is a lot that you see on the screen that's depressing because, of course. But on the other hand, what it made me realize was the heroism, and to which you allude with the World War II stuff, the heroism of ordinary human beings when called upon. And there are scenes in that show which it's just breathtaking what people were willing to do for the common good. There's a scene early on where they have to shut down a water valve. That radioactive water is threatening to melt the core, which will result in millions of Russian citizens' deaths. And three men volunteer, knowing that by going in and wading through this radioactive water to get to the shutoff switch, they will die. They're going to give themselves cancer and die. And they do it because they know they need to. And you're with them, following them through that water. And it's a long and stunning sequence. And P.S., what you find out at the very end, those men lived. They expected to live no more than a year. They were told this when they accepted the assignment. I think two of them are still alive to this day. And one died in like the late 90s. Unrelated to cancer. And there are moments like that throughout this show that make you go, people, when there are people who are heroes every frickin' day, and we will never know their names, and they did remarkable things and sometimes died doing those things for the rest of us to watch them on fictionalized on a show. It was just extraordinarily well done, the whole show. I recommend it. What I love, too, side note, is that it was cast not with Brad Pitt-type actors. It was cast with established actors like Emily Watson and what's his name, Jared Harris, who look like people. Jared Harris has pockmarks on his face. And Emily Watson, she's just a great actress. Is that the one of – not Emma Watson, Emily Watson. Yeah, who is in Breaking the Waves. They just look real. And all of the faces of all the actors, you're with them because they're us. We look like that. So that was one of the things I watched. And again, it made me go, you know what? You're complaining because you got to stay 6 feet away from somebody. Well, guess what? These people lived through fucking Chernobyl. And they persisted and they survived.
And I guess what I'm wondering, Dan, is if you look at the polling data that shows somewhere between, you know, this hateful, noisy plurality and like what happened up in Michigan, if you looked at the pictures, they all look like they're coming from a Ted Nugent cosplay convention. OK.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a pretty and there's a lot, you know, in Michigan, there's a lot of those dangerous, bloodthirsty militia types.
I remember Michigan.
Yeah. Oklahoma City was born in the woods of Upper Michigan.
Mm.
And they're about, according to the polling data, about 12 to 18%. So it would seem that most of America is as good as we would like to think we are.
Yep.
Because we are taking this seriously. But for instance, what happened in Michigan today, and as someone who is deliberately immunocompromised as you are, you probably get this all the way to the core of your being more readily and easily than do the rest of us. That gang of dangerous nut jobs were actually verminous because they were spreaders of disease.
Right.
And so, you know, there's this ratio number that we talk about now. For instance, the Germans are paying close attention to it. The ability of one infected person to infect other persons. When you get it down to one, at least according to the scientists in Germany, you can start thinking about moving around a little bit. But if it goes above one, you got trouble. Well, in Michigan, given the problems that they already have, these howling harbingers of grim death, their ratio's got, you know, it's been said that the ratio for this virus is as high as six. One infection can lead to six more diseases, and then, as I've said earlier before on the program, you're into that shampoo commercial from the 70s. And she told
and
two
they
people,
told
and
someone,
she told it, right.
They told two people.
Yeah.
Yeah, I watch television a lot, too. Yes, I got that one.
And so what does that, I mean, how do you respond to that? And there have been manifestations of this phenomenon that don't involve right-wing maniac militia types.
Well, that's
not all that
yes.
far from you. I mean, Williamsburg, Brooklyn, a couple of days ago,
right.
out in the streets, but, hundreds of people.
Right.
And what is
Here's
that?
The
I mean,
thing.
What does that mean for you? I mean, how far from the city are you?
Well, first of all, I'm 30 miles from New York City. In my particular county, Rockland County, we actually do have a very large community of Hasidic Jews. And P.S., per capita, I don't know if it's the case right now, but at least 2 or 3 weeks ago, per capita, Rockland County was the per capita COVID-19 capital of the United States. We had more per citizen than anybody else. And so that creates, listen, because not all of the Hasidic, that's the thing too, my daughter pointed out to me the other day that, and I know I'm detouring a little bit. I'll get back to your question. My daughter pointed out to me the other day, because she knows more about it than I do, that the Hasidic population, we think of the Hasidic as being one unified front because they are other to us. They are exotic. They're unique. They're alien to us. They're deliberately alien to us. They isolate themselves from mainstream consumer culture and religious culture. But the fact is that Hasidic cultures, Hasidic population, especially in Rockland County, they're not all playing from the same rule book. Some rabbis do encourage vaccinations and do encourage more compliance with modern medical standards. Others go against that, the same as some evangelicals go against that. But because we do have a large Hasidic population, and because we did at least, and maybe still do have per capita, a tremendous problem with COVID-19, that also then spurs pre-existing anti-Semitic resentments against, quote unquote, those people where I live. And at the same time, ignoring the fact that there is, it's all kinds of people, there are all kinds of people ignoring protocol and doing things not correctly at all. You see, when you were talking about the militias and the people with the guns and the yellow, what do you call it? The piss yellow, the urine colored flag.
The urine colored snake flag, yes.
Urine color snake flag people. Now, we know those are extremes. I mean, they get a lot
of
attention.
Don't breathe on me.
They get a lot of attention because they're very much out there. They're very loud and they carry guns. P.S. They're also white, so they can get away with shit that black people wouldn't. Because as we all know, dark skin plus gun equals terrorist. White skin plus gun equals patriot. But it's not that I discount those people. They're fucking frightening. But this is what I'm afraid of more than those people, because I don't run into those people. I don't really know those people, at least overtly. I probably went to high school with some of those people, but I don't know who those people are. But this is what scares me, Bob, is just there are still levels of ignorance, whether deliberate or just or well-intentioned misinformation, all around me, and I'm sure you, every day. We have a lot of public parks and state parks in our area. It's, again, if you're going to live in the New York City area, I would recommend Rockland County very highly. It's great. There's lots of lakes. There's lots of parks. And 30-mile drive away, there's all of Broadway and the media center and so forth of the Big Apple. But, you know, I live in this little suburban community, and I go out for walks. And, you know, I used to go out in parks. We have a number of parks, as I just said. And one of my favorite trails was about a 2.5-mile wooded trail going up and down hills and with long stretches of flat levels so you could sort of catch your breath. There was a dog run in the center of it, a fenced-in dog run. And it was just very nice. But then once, you know, back in whatever, early March, when we all started figuring out that this was more than the flu, et cetera, we knew the shutdown was coming. It hadn't come yet. I was taking walks out there, and at that time I was aware of the 6-foot rule. So when people would approach me, I kept moving. I was the one always to take these piles of leaves while people walked past me. And most of the time, they wouldn't remark upon it. They wouldn't say, oh, geez, or thank you, whatever. I'm not asking for thanks. Unlike sure. our president, I don't really care if I'm praised for every common sense thing I do. But anyway, these people, my fellow white, mostly white Rockland Countyans, would just walk down the path as if it were any other time period of their lives. And I would be standing there watching them do it. And there were three moments that I will remember from those days, one of which was a woman passing by with her kids. And as I stood watching her, she said, oh, don't worry, they're fine. And I said something to the effect of, well, I just don't know that they're fine. And, you know, something I can't remember what I said in reply. I tried not to be snarky because there were children present. I can be the snarkiest goddamn person you'll ever meet if you get my dander up, and that story will come in a moment. But I let her go with something of just saying, look, I don't know your kids. Your kids don't know me. You know, I'm doing what I'm doing. Thank you very much. The second couple passed me another time, and they actually did thank me, and they said, and they did praise me, and I'm gonna praise myself here, because they said, you know what, you're the only person doing this on this trail. Thank you. And I said, you're welcome. And it was just so great to know that somebody, just at least somebody else, one other group of people got it. But then here's the kicker. The third person on this very same hike, I kid you not, I saw this couple approaching me, and they had the dog. They had the whole thing, and they were taking up the whole, between the three of them, Mr., Mrs., and dog, they took up the entire, I'm guessing, 12-foot wide path. So I did my thing. I stood off to the right in my pile of leaves, and as they got closer, I see that the man, I'm not exaggerating, I ain't lying, was wearing a Bush Cheney 2000 t-shirt.
Well,
you know, I guess he hadn't been doing the laundry in a while, or that maybe that was his workout shirt, you know, whatever it was, he just wanted to let everybody know where he stood on all this stuff. Well, they passed me by. And he looks up at me standing in my pile of leaves, and he says to me, oh, social distancing, huh? I guess that's what we're doing now, in that snarky way. And this is the thing, Bob, is that I knew through work a person who had died just the day before. I can't really say he was my friend, but the face was familiar. I crossed paths with him over many a production, I'm sure. He was a costumer, on-set costumer named Josh. I can't remember his last name because, again, we weren't close friends, but I knew the face and I knew his name was Josh, and I knew that he had just died of COVID-19 the day before. So as Mr. Bush Cheney 2000 walked past and made his snarky remark, I replied thusly, a friend of mine died yesterday. His name was Josh. I take this shit seriously. And that's all I said. And when, of course, whenever you – yeah, I dropped an H-bomb right in his face, and I did not give a flying fuck. And plus, whenever you use the words like fuck or shit, especially if you use them rather judiciously, as I try to do, when you do use them, they tend to land. And I think that one landed from the expression on his face. And I'm sure by the time he got back and retold the story, I was an asshole. But I know the truth, and I'm telling your listeners the truth. These people scare me more than the people with guns, because they think they're doing the right thing. They think, I don't have it, I'm fine, I can go out with a mask. Well, no, you can't. You know, we know that the people with the guns and the flags and the Confederate stickers on their pickup trucks, we know they're assholes. It's the people who you can't tell are assholes. At least he was wearing a Bush Cheney shirt. But there are lots of assholes among us. We have no idea.
And that's why I brought up the assholes in Michigan. I mean, the one photograph I'm looking at right now, dude looks like if you took his camo jacket and hat off of him, he looks like a diorama. He looks like what you'd see painted on a diorama of a caveman in a 1950s museum exhibit. You know, mouth open, all hairy. Beard, you know, and you can just tell that that's not an actual word that's being emitted from his open, shrieking, howling mouth. It's not the guns. I mean, the guns are intimidating, and that's why they were brought in Michigan today, Dan.
Oh, sure.
But the fact of the matter is, that guy with his mouth howling open is potentially spewing God knows thousands of COVID particles.
Yeah. And they're having children. They have children. Who also carry those germs, and who also then carry the germs that will, you know, the verbal germs, the ideas, dangerous, terrible ideas. They will be spreading those ideas for the next generation. I will tell you one thing too about, you know, here's one thing to think about with those friggin' red caps of Make America Great Again. At least they've got uniforms. When you see a red cap coming your way, you know what's coming up,
right?
And you can choose to engage or ignore. But they're wearing the uniform, and you know it. By the way, too, did you see that little I haven't watched the episode yet, but I saw the snippet on YouTube of Larry David on Curb Your Enthusiasm with the red
hat. With the red hat? Yes.
Yeah. He doesn't want to talk to people, so he puts it on, and voila, instant anti-human magnet.
Right, and the maggots saw that and just laughed and laughed because they thought it was so funny.
Right.
They missed the irony. They missed the sarcasm. So for all they know, he was being sarcastic when he said drink bleach.
Right.
And I had one of those little moments over up in the Wiggling Pig the other night. Every now and it, you know, there are some things that we're sort of challenged on around here. And one of those is keeping perishables.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd like Agnes and I like to have, you know, half and half in our coffee in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And we were out, and I had just enough time to get up there, about 6 miles up the road. And so I go in there, and I run back, and I get my half and half, and I'm standing in the checkout line. And a young man who couldn't be any older than my son is, you know, 24,
mm-hmm.
Wearing a shirt with the sleeves ripped off of it, not cut, but ripped, you know, 'cause freedom. With the outline of a skull on the back of it, and he's got a Freedom Protector strapped to his hip because he can't go to the grocery store with mama without strapping heat, because you never know when the Rona zombies are gonna come barreling through the Wiggling Pig at 5 minutes till 9, because you know that's when the assholes come in right before closing. And so I got my groceries there on the conveyor. I got a mask on, I got gloves on, and he gets right up on top of me, and I saw the gun, and I'm like, well, this may be the end of you. And I looked at him and said, son, back off 6 feet, please. And mercifully, you know, he didn't draw, but he looked a little sheepish. And backed up, and his mama dirty looked me, and she backed up behind him. And I've never been so happy to get out of a place in my life.
Well, it is true he was armed, but, you know, this is a, you know, obviously not a visual medium, this podcast. maybe your listeners know, maybe they don't, that Bob Kincaid is a large, you know, very kind of imposing physical specimen. I recall you being over 6 feet tall, probably what, 6'3"?
6'2".
6'2"?
6'2", 220.
Yeah, yeah. And I wouldn't mess with you if I came upon you in a dark alley. And then throw in the Orson Welles voice and you got something. You know, it's, you don't, you...
There's,
you know,
a place,
yeah,
in England where Mrs. Fields grows peas.
Peas. Do I really have to say there's a place?
That's why I love these conversations.
Because I get it.
You were there. You were not only there, Dan. You were there and waiting for me to get there. That's
right.
The beauty of all of this.
That's right. And listen, you know, such things as physical imposition and deep baritone voices are not bulletproof vests, but they serve their purpose. I pull out the I'm a heart patient, a heart transplant recipient around all the time if it serves my purpose. It can get me things a little quicker. It can get people to shut up and listen to what I have to tell them. It does all kinds of things. You know, we use what we got, and those who are afraid that they don't got enough, those are the ones that buy A15s, and they walk into Target as if ninjas were going to, you know, suddenly jump out of the kids' shoe department. So, you know, they're scaredy cats. But speaking of scaredy cats, I'll tell you another thing I'm scaredy cat about is little kids. They scare the shit out of me because they just magnetize toward me like I'm Willy Wonka handing out the whistle pops, you know. I don't, you know, I really should just start, you know, doing that little sort of Sid and Marty Croft jump and heel click every time I walk down the street, because kids just go toward me and I just have to keep saying, no, where's your parents? No, no. Because I live in this sort of housing community, right? We've got this nice, this perfect half mile stretch of road that leads from the first house down in our area to the very last one, and there's hills. It's a really lovely place to walk, except that, you know, in these times of social distancing, some people got the memo and some people don't. And P.S. kids don't even know how to read the memo. So kids are, it's like those you know, movies with the kids with the little kids with bombs strapped to them coming up to the soldiers. It's like, no, 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 no. That's how I feel like all the freaking time when I go out for my daily walk.
Yeah, before the Rona ever even got loose, before the Rona was ever even a twinkle in Donald Trump's beady little eyes.
Well, that's another thing, too. I don't want children magnetized toward me because I don't want to be the neighborhood creep. You know, I want to just be friendly yeah. Dan who some people knows works in the movies, and that makes
yeah,
it
but
kind of interesting.
I saw you without a haircut. I saw that picture.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You may be fighting You may be fighting an uphill battle, Dan.
That's pretty creepy, huh? Well, that's my big boy look. It was a challenge that one of my friends had posted something about. By the way, you know what it's like to get up and not shower in a day, and what do you look like? And then I posted one of my own, and it was. I'm getting rather cockatoo-ish here with my uncut,
you know, that,
gray hair.
Cockatoo was exactly what I thought when I saw that photograph. Well, let me do a couple of things here.
I'll let you do whatever you want. It's your show.
Because we get talking movies, and that light spokes up.
Yeah, nothing like movies.
Glenn in San Diego said, I've recently discovered an unbelievably great source for streaming movies online. It's called Canopy, Canopy. It's free.
Dude, that's free.
With no commercials, as long as you have a library card and your public library subscribes to the service. It began as a service for universities and film schools, but has expanded to public libraries as well. Their catalog is amazingly large and wonderful, with many films from the Criterion Collection, as well as classics and international films. It's set up in a similar way to Netflix and Amazon Prime, but in my opinion, is even better in some ways. If you're not one already, this site will turn you into a cinephile for sure. Just go to Canopy, Canopy.com. I found myself having to ration the time spent just building my watch list. Meanwhile, George.
What's his name?
That's Glenn. Glenn in San Diego.
Glenn, if I had a cowbell, I would be ringing the cowbell right now. I love.
You have a friend who has one.
I had a cowbell.
I'd cowbell in the morning.
Canopy freaking rocks. It's 10 free movies a month. 10 free movies. And yeah, since I've been on a Canopy spree during this time, I've watched stuff like I don't think it was on. Actually, I don't want to start confusing. I've watched The Wages of Fear. I've watched a documentary about how Night of the Living Dead was made. I watched, I think, The Stuntman. There's just lots of The Florida Project. And then on Amazon Prime, you get either free or rent. And yeah, it's evil Jeff Bezos. I get that. But I have watched stuff like Cat People, the original Cat People, The Bad and the Beautiful, Pan's Labyrinth for about the
umpteenth time. I need to go back and do that. That may be one that I think that may be one that bugs Agnes.
But, yeah. But I'm an old classic movie freak. I don't have TCM. And I just also love the idea that if I feel I'm in the mood to watch the Lavender Hill Mob or Lavender Hill Gang, Lavender Hill Mob, I'm going to watch it, which is actually, I say that because I intend to watch it tonight when we're done.
Let me throw another one out there because, like I said, we get talking about movies and suddenly people want to talk. I've got George on the stress line.
Again. Sorry, George.
I've got George on the stress George. Line who wants to make a recommendation. Go, George.
Hi, this is George from Course Goals, California.
Yeah. Are we live, George?
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll make it quick. One of the greatest World War II movies is, even though John Wayne's in it, it stars Robert Montgomery as a PT boat captain. They Were Expendable. It's called They Were Expendable.
That is a good one.
That's a great one.
And Donna Reed's in it, and it's probably John Wayne's best acting job.
At least until he got through Grit.
I think it's better. I think he's better in that.
And my other recommendation is the best JFK assassination movie is Executive Action.
I knew you were going to say that. I went to I saw that in the movie theater when I was a kid in the 70s.
Scared the hell out of me.
Yeah.
When Robert Ryan tells Burt Lancaster the plan to reduce the population of people that are not necessary in the world, it's chilling.
So it's Robert Ryan, Burt Lancaster, another film.
My friend Burt Lancaster, yep.
The man who couldn't say no to a script.
Will Gear.
Will Gear. Yeah, if you've not seen it, Dan,
it's right. Thank you, gentlemen.
All right, take care,
George. Thank you, George.
Bye.
Thanks for chiming in.
Thanks. That's
Executive Action. It's not as slick and conspiracy. I mean, it's a huge conspiracy. It doesn't have the rich narrative and Joe Pesci and Tommy Lee Jones as JFK. But the thing is, it was an early take on. On the assassination, relatively speaking, because, it's within 10, 12 years' time of the event itself.
Right. And is that John Frankenheimer, by the way? Do you know who did Executive Action? It just feels like it should have been if it wasn't a Frankenheimer. Plus, I know Frankenheimer and Lancaster did The Train together. But, George, by the way, George, I'm assuming you're still listening. If you do the Facebook thing, I'd love it if you sent me an invite because I always – I'm always posting stuff about my love of movies, and I mention old movies a lot, and I think you'd have a lot to add to the conversation.
The director was this is all going to make so much sense now. I'd forgotten who did the screenplay. The director's David Miller. The screenplay is Dalton Trumbo.
Dalton Trumbo. I Am Spartacus.
Yeah, Roman Holiday.
Everything.
Which, by the way, Agnes and I watched the other night because there's just never a bad time for Gregory Peck and Audrey Hepburn.
Gregory Peck. I bet you could do Gregory Peck if you tried.
I do a bad Steve Landisberg doing Gregory Peck.
God bless Steve Landisberg.
Go away.
Barney Miller.
Beverly is not here. She has made other plans, and they don't include you.
See, it's not very good. I've never put the work in on it.
You know, I'm sure you could concur. As a father, my daughter is now 20. Yeah. But when my daughter was younger, I really wanted like my own Atticus Finch moment with her. That thing of like, you know, did Mama leave me anything?
Well, there's a pair of earrings, you know, in a drawer that you have when you're married or something.
And he hands her the pocket watch.
How does Helene feel about you wanting to have that talk? Well, where am I, Dan?
Oh, they're used to it. They're used to it. Well, you know, every father wants his little private Gregory Peck moment. But and that pocket watch, he hands Scout the pocket watch that's still attached to his vest. And that look on her face and the way she catches it. It's just, oh, my God, I'm going to cry right now.
So I just queued up the trailer to Executive Action just to pique your interest.
Uh-huh.
At this point in time, can you believe that Lee Harvey Oswald killed President John F. Kennedy by himself? Don't make your decision until you see Executive Action, possibly the most controversial motion picture of our time.
Start the target.
A film that nobody would make until now.
Fire!
Never before in American history has one family held such an enormous concentration of political power. The plan is perfectly plain. Two terms for JFK, two for Bobby, and two for Ted.
Which makes action now imperative.
What kind of action?
Executive.
Burt Lancaster.
I'll take it from here, Bob.
Robert Ryan and Will Gear take Executive Action in a drama where startling fiction challenges established facts.
Probabilities for success are almost 100%.
They're like the Bay of Pigs.
Now look, you're a high-risk man. You're on contract. Your men are all experienced in black operations. You take your chances and you get paid for it, and damn well.
Now here's the best part. When Burt Lancaster repeats that line, Dan, he's wearing a red hat.
That's not a cap, though, right?
No, it's a cap. It's a red baseball
cap. It's a red cap?
Yes.
Oh, my God. And you know, by the way, that Will Gear, who also, of course, played Grandpa Walton in The Waltons, he was blacklisted in the 50s, as was Dalton Trumbo.
Yes.
And I believe also that Ralph Waite, who played Pa Walton, I don't think he was blacklisted, but I know that he was a very far left winger himself, Ralph Waite was. And I think Will Gearitt even might have come out of like the John Houseman, Mercury Theater type folk. I might be completely off base.
But, and by the way, we have to loop back for a minute because you made a reference earlier that just jumped all over Brother Deacon Asa. And he said, I love Dan's top 20s. See if he'll do one for top 20 time loops, flicks like Next and Vantage Point, unless he's already done one and I missed it. Also, quote, that terrible M. Night Shyamalan movie, you have to be a lot more specific, Dan.
Lady in the Water. right. I actually tried watching that the show he did for Apple TV last night, and I was surprised to find the critics actually were pretty easy on it. I thought it was quite dreadful. But that's another thing. But yeah, he peaked, you know, Sixth Sense, and it was all downhill from there.
Yep.
And what's,
I see
what's,
stupid
what's
people.
Our friend's name? I see stupid.
Yeah, that's Asa who made you
Asa,
watch.
Asa, the Hebrew Hammer.
Yes.
Yeah, he's our Canadian friend who he didn't make me watch it. I watched it on my own. I'm glad I did. No, I haven't seen Galaxy Quest yet. I don't know why. I just keep forgetting. Okay,
you're just gonna sit there and ask yourself, why did I wait so long?
I know. I do that all the time. By the way, I felt that way with Seven Samurai. I found that very recently with what was it? Oh, The Harder They Come, which I think is available. No, that's a Canopy movie, The Harder They Come. And I was like, why didn't I watch this before?
Is that the Harder They Fall?
No, The Harder They Come with Jimmy Cliff. The one that we all have the soundtrack album to, but,
yes,
but
yes,
not
yes,
everybody
yes.
has seen the movie.
Okay.
Well, I was one of those people. I had the soundtrack album. It was, you know, my first reggae, you know, it's either that or Bob Marley's Greatest Hits is always my first reggae. And terrific, you know. I mean, it's very 1970s, but you know. Anyway, I'm constantly going, why did I wait? What was I afraid of? Why didn't I, you know? Why did I have to watch some movies like 12 times and not and wait to catch this Truffaut or even catch this you know The Mac or something like that, a blaxploitation movie? You know, well, these are great. You know, basically, if they're in the 1970s, I'm going to watch it. I hadn't seen The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3 until very recently. That's, what was so, wrong with
wait, there is such a there's such a sense of kismet that attaches to this program. We were talking about The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3 on this program a few nights ago, and I know you weren't listening.
I was not. I wish I could tell you.
And so here's another example. I was in Kroger today, and I don't know why, but I'm wheeling my buggy, and now all the lanes are one way in the grocery store. Once again, hillbillies having a hard time with that. If they'd grown up in cities, they'd understand one-way streets. They didn't. They don't. So they're having a real problem with the one-way. But I turn the right way down an aisle, and in my head, the voice of the prophet, because we were talking about Bill Hicks, I guess, two nights ago, the voice of the prophet Bill Hicks, peace be upon him, pops into my head going, no fucking way! You know, when he's talking about the view out of the book depository over Dealey Plaza.
Oh, uh-huh.
No fucking way! And so I'm turning, and I hear that, and it just goes into my head, and it goes on about its business, and I sit down, we fire up the mic, we get talking, and we get a recommendation for executive action. I can't explain that, Dan. It's kind of delightfully weird.
So yeah, so and that's available on. But you've seen that movie before, right? The Walter Matthau version, not the other one.
Yes, the Walter Matthau. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, it's on Prime Video for free. And P.S., I do have two free movie recommendations for your listeners.
Yes.
They're both on YouTube, and you can watch them anytime you want without any charge. One is a very depressing but wonderful 1969 movie called They Shoot Horses, Don't They? With Jane Fonda and Michael Sarrazin.
I did the dancing scene, the dance marathon scene from that. In acting class at WVU.
Oh wow, it's Fonda's incredible in it. I mean, I knew she was incredible, you know, in everything. You know, Clute, she's a revelation, but she's every bit as good. You know what it was about Jane Fonda as an actress is that she was really good at that. I don't give a shit. Like she did not, you know, it was after all of those decades of ingenues desperately giving a shit or trying to get through to the hero. Here was a woman playing a character who it's like if a man said I love you, she'd look at him like drop dead sucker. And, you know, Betty Davis could do that. But Jane Fonda was the new generation of that. But as a movie, it's a little 1969 in places, you know, those sort of little flashbacky scenes with the weird lenses. But it's free and it's terrific. And then but even more probably relevant to you and your audiences, and I'm sure you've seen this. The documentary Harlan County, USA. Barbara Koppel.
Oh yeah.
I'd never seen it. It's another one of those why did it take so long? And my God, what an incredible movie, an incredible portrait of people who are not at all dissimilar to the people that I grew up knowing, and you as well. And it takes place in the 1970s when I was a child and remembered those things and the people and the cars and the haircuts. And names like Jock Jablonski and Tony Boyle. I'd heard those names on the radio but didn't know much about them until I watched that movie. And it's a phenomenal, inspiring movie. The women of Harlan County.
And that film in particular, though, provides by virtue of the long lens of time, it provides an opportunity for us in the here and now to watch that, admire the people in the film, many of them, the women who are the heroes. And then when it's over, you sit back and go, what the actual fuck happened? Because if you go to Harlan County today, It's almost as though nobody in Harlan County could possibly be even remotely related to the people who are in that documentary.
Yes, and this goes back to what you and I were discussing at the top of the program before we got into the movie stuff about truth becoming something else, of truth being deliberately ignored until there is no such thing as truth, until you have to call it objective truth or just simply data. That is, these people were so, you know, the people on strike, and the coal miners were, I think, by and large men. These men that went on strike and their wives who stood by them, they simply would not accept non-truth. They would not accept spin. They only had one truth. We need better working conditions. We need better pay for what we do because this is a deadly business. It'll kill us either instantly or over time. But we will not stand for alternatives to what we know to be true, which is we deserve better, and we will stand and fight for what we – and by the way, without guns, the people who brought the guns were the bad guys, were the strike breakers and the scabs. But these people, by and large, did not bring guns. They just brought themselves and literally put themselves on the front lines of a simple battle of, you know, you're making all the profits. We deserve a little slice more of that profit so that we do not have to live in poverty while we are working. You know, and even now, the idea that there is such a socially acceptable thing as the working poor is outrageous. It's ridiculous. So many things right now are ridiculous. It's ridiculous to have a conversation, to have to remind people that, no, you cannot inject disinfectant into the human body without your liver and your kidneys paying.
And as absurd as that is, Dan, it is as or more ridiculous in a state like West Virginia, and God knows in states like Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, South Carolina, with a pandemic raging through the country, there is a significant number of millions of people uninsured. Who, if they get sick, dare not even try to get tested.
Yep.
Because if they were to be hospitalized.
Not that there are tests for them. Not that there are tests,
not that there are
them,
tests for them. But if there were, if they were to be tested, and if they were to come up positive, and if they were to be hospitalized, even if they survive, Dan, they're ruined. And we were having a conversation here in my family because we talk about things like this. We can't help it. The fact that any social ill in this country, and I don't think you can overstate this, any social ill in this country is not a product of the operation of some law of nature.
Mm-hmm.
And just because Jesus says the poor ye have always with ye in the Gospels doesn't mean that every society is destined to have poor people. Whatever is wrong in this country is a function of a choice that has been made in this country that has not been made in large part by the people who bear the brunt of that choice. If we have poverty in this country, it is because people in power have chosen for there to be poverty in this country. If we have homelessness in this country, it is because people in power have decided that we are going to have homelessness in this country. If we have hunger in this country, be it adult or child, it is because people in power have made a choice that there will be hunger in this country, and the same applies to health care.
And let me interrupt, and those are all great and very, very strong and relevant points. But this also goes back to these words I keep using over and over, truth, 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 truth. And God knows I'm not Gandhi. I like plenty. But if you know, who said it? I can't remember. You know, there is a quote from the movie, I believe, The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, when the truth becomes legend, print the legend. Something akin to that is this. Lies, if we allow lies, if we don't even push back when our uncles or our old pals that we went to high school with post shit online or at a dinner or at a family gathering, if we don't push back a little because we know we won't win, we let lies win. We let lies take the place of truth and over time become conventional wisdom. And one case of that, applied directly to what you just said, is this notion that, oh, well, you know what, we're going to pay McDonald's workers $15 an hour, and those jobs are for high school kids. Well, wait a minute. Those jobs are every bit as valid as any other job. They're a job. You're on your feet for 8 hours of a day. You're serving people a product that, that people pay money for, and they need, to some extent, they need to live, to subsist on. And a corporation, which is their boss, which has all of these, you know, billions and billions served, is making a tremendous amount of profit, to which much of it goes to stockholders and executives. It is not outrageous to propose that somebody who is on their feet flipping hamburgers all day long should be paid $15 an hour, which adds up to $120 before taxes for a day's work. Given what rent has become, what groceries, what medications have become, that is not too much. That's not an outrageous sum of money, $120 a day before taxes. But you can damn well bet that the people that you are, you know, that you have talked about and I'm talking about, they love to bring up the McDonald's teenager hamburger flipping thing. They love to bring up that, again, McDonald's. They love to bring up the story of the lady who spilled coffee on her lap. And that's
oh,
why
don't
people,
get me going.
Yeah, I think you and I even discussed this.
Yeah, that one burns me up. Randy in PA just wrote and said about that. You know, my friends, those jobs are for teenagers. Give me another handful of those Oxycontins. Randy in PA says that's what Rush said. But when I went into KFC, I found washed up 55-year-olds and 70-year-olds.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's the damn truth.
I could be one of those people. I'm not sure, you know, when the time comes 9 years from now, when I plan to retire from my occupation as a prop master and set dresser, I might very well be one of those guys with the bow tie greeting you at the Home Depot. I think I'm well qualified for that job. So, you know, I don't look down on work. If you get off your ass and you work, you're good. You're good with me.
Well, you and I have a little mutual fan club for John Sayles and Mate One, and there are some fantastic lines out of that film.
Yes.
There's two kinds of people in this world, them that work and them that don't. You work, they don't.
Those lines uttered by the great actor Chris Cooper.
Yes.
Playing Joe Kinahan.
And of course, the other one. Yeah. I mean, my life is, as you well know, movie lines. And there's two others that, and you know, you got some time on your hands. Go find Mate One and watch it, please. Stop telling us which movies to watch about oppression of the labor force in Appalachia, Bob. Okay. I beat you to it, damn it.
But you know what? This one has gunfights at the end. This one has violence at the end. It's not all medicine. You know, all these movies we recommend, Bob and I, I know they sound like medicine, but they're really tasty medicine.
Oh, yes, they are.
And
a spoonful of Clorox helps the medicine go down. Yeah, never mind.
Okay, disclaimer. Clorox should not be taken internally.
Yeah.
Externally, maybe. We used to put Clorox on our bug bites. But anyway, you had a point.
Yep. All we got in common is our misery, so the least we can do is share it.
Right.
That's the other one. And for any place you are that you don't want to be, let's roll, Griggsy. The sooner out of this shithole, the better. and then possibly the meanest line, and I include James Cagney with the grapefruit in this list. The meanest line I've ever seen delivered by a man to a woman in a film.
Mm-hmm.
You are the prettiest piece of mountain trash I have ever seen. Jesus, it makes the little hairs stand up on the back of my neck when Kevin Tye does that.
Kevin Tye, who used to star in
Emergency.
What television? Emergency, that's right. Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah. Along with Randolph Mantooth.
Randy Mantooth, that's right. But yeah, to those, again, newbies, possible newbies to the show, P.S., Mate One was the very first movie I worked on back in 1986. Since then, I've worked on over 100 movies in 30-something years.
If I hadn't have been so hell-bent on graduating, I'm still bitter. Because my parents were actually down here when that was being filmed, and they were taking a bus tour of the gorge and everything, and they were down there shooting yeah. Thurmond and everything. But if I hadn't been so damned intent on graduating early,
well, George Bailey, you've had a wonderful life.
Well, yeah, Zuzu pedals, right?
That's right. Oh, and before we lose the movie thread entirely, and again, to address the movies as medicine stuff that we tend to do here with the highfalutin stuff, there is another completely fun, terrific movie that's available for free on YouTube, The Abominable Dr. Fibes, starring Vincent Price. Have you ever seen that one?
No.
Oh, dude, you can quote the Bible. You know your Bible, right? Vincent Price plays a mad scientist, surprise, surprise, who blames 9 doctors for his wife's tragic demise and goes about exacting revenge by killing them. Each one is assigned a biblical plague as his form of death. So he kills people with rats and frogs and raining blood. I couldn't name you the 9 plagues offhand, but it's a fantastic movie. I remember seeing it on the CBS late night movie on Friday nights. Used to have that one on a lot, along with Planet of the Apes and a really terrible old monster movie, not really monster movie, called Night of the Lepus, which was about giant rabbits, starring what's her name, Janet, the one that starred in Psycho. I'm blanking on
Janet Leigh.
Janet Leigh. Yeah, Janet Leigh. Night of the Leap is about marauding giant rabbits in a small town. CBS Friday night, late night at the movies, used to have just run horror movies more often than not. And so I was a big fan of those. But yes, The Abominable Dr. Fibes on YouTube. It's well worth your hour and 40 minutes of free time, because it is for free. And Vincent Price, I don't know if he was ever better.
And we are not the only Mate One fans out there. Irish Dave just wrote in and said,
"Ray,
I've met Mr. Feltz. I wouldn't pee on him if his heart was on fire."
David Strathairn, Smiling Sid Hatfield.
So many great starts to so many careers out of that film.
Oh, sure, yeah. Mary McDonnell, David Strathairn, Chris Cooper. What's his name? The kid who later became. God, I'm getting senior moments all of a sudden. But the kid who played Danny, the preacher, later became better known as a folk musician by the name of Bonnie Prince Billy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And he's like this Americana sort of mini icon. It's like he has more fans than you and I put together. Let's just put it that way. And God knows you have fans.
Well, I mean. And I just happen to have, for your edification here, one of the great little moments from the film, delivered by the director himself.
Uh-huh.
John Sayles.
What am I talking about?
Jesus.
I can't hear you.
Jesus.
I still can't hear you.
Jesus
Christ our Lord. Do you know his name?
Have
you seen
Jesus.
His glory? Have you felt the warming comfort of his precious love? Praise Jesus. Praise his holy name. Praise his blessed spirit. Praise his everlasting love. Jesus Christ our Lord. Listen to me now. Listen to me.
This gives me chills.
The prince of darkness.
Darkness.
Is upon the lion.
Is upon us.
Now in the Bible, his name is Beelzebub,
Lord of the flies.
Right now on earth today, his name is Bolshevik, Socialist, Communist, Union Man, Lord of untruth, sower of evil seed, enemy of all that is good and this creature walks among us.
God, I love that. I love that.
And, you know, that scene, I believe that takes place in the year 1919,
yep.
I think.
Yep.
Or maybe 1919, I think.
Yep.
I never thought growing up that I would hear those words not used ironically or in a historical context. But by golly, I've been hearing them for the past at least 5 to 10 years.
Yep.
I've been called a communist online. I've been called a socialist. I am neither of those. I mean, listen, I have friends who probably call themselves socialist. I'm still more of the, you know, I believe in capitalism if it's done right. If you follow the rules, I think capitalism can be marvelous.
Democratic
my daughter,
capitalism.
Yeah, I mean,
well,
listen,
my general response to being called a communist is you best hope I'm not.
Yeah. I may, by the time all is said and done, I'm out of here. You know, I may go full democratic socialist. I may be persuaded that that is truly the way.
Well, you're tickling brain cells all over the country and all over the planet, Darlene in Connecticut. Oh my God, I love Vincent Price, best voice ever in the biz, next to James Earl Jones. And trivia thing, one of the best cookbooks ever produced. A Treasury of Great Recipes by Vincent and Mary Price from, I think, 1959. Padded, it's a big coffee table kind of with beautiful color photography. And he was quite the gourmand, and he had cadged recipes out of every great restaurant on earth. If you find one at like Powell's Books or whatever, it might be a little bit pricey, depending on quality. But I have the first recipe I ever baked from scratch, I baked out of that book. It was for our foreign language dinner in the high school, and I mean I made the crust. I did it all. I was taking French at the time, so I made quiche lorraine, and it was fabulous. Imagine trying to find Gruyere in 1979 in Northwest Alabama. We drove to Huntsville. Because civilization. Let's see. Darlene also.
Let me just say though, before we get to Darlene, I just have to say, I mean, who doesn't love Vincent Price, right? I mean, just think of it. He started out as this serious actor. He was in Laura, and then like somewhere in like the '50s, it just like it didn't matter if you had a check and you spelled his name right, he'd be in your movie. I mean, he did all those William Castle movies, like scream for your lives, and then you know. And later, you know, at the end of his years, he was doing Michael Jackson Thriller. He was showing up in Edward Scissorhands. Who, if you don't love Vincent Price, you're wrong.
Yes. And I think you can say the same thing for John Carradine.
Oh, God. Yeah. I just watched Grapes of Wrath last week, and he's so fantastic in that. You know, he's got that scene where he punches the cop and he volunteers, you know, or no, Henry Fonda has punched the cop, but Casey. Casey takes the hit for it. He's like, yeah, I punched him, you know. And he's just so marvelous in everything. Yeah, but, yeah, and then John Carradine, I think, did like over 500 movies. John Carradine would do semi-porn. He would literally do anything.
He had all them boys to feed.
It was just work.
He had all them boys to feed.
And I think he just liked – I think he wasn't happy unless he was making a movie. Eric Roberts is our current John Carradine equivalent. Eric Roberts has done over 350 movies, and I listened to an interview with him. He just says, I like to work. I don't like not working. I hate being around the house. I'd rather be on a movie set every day of the year. I don't care what it is. I'll do it. This is the way he feels.
So
he's made shitloads of terrible movies.
So Darlene,
but, I'm sorry.
Darlene wants to know, did you get a chance to watch Brad Pitt's Ad Astra? And what did you think of Pitt's impersonation of Dr. Fauci on SNL?
I like the Fauci imitation. I thought it was, you know, I like the things they're doing with SNL. I just watched Kate McKinnon do the thing with the cats. Have you seen that one yet? Cats Are Us.
Yes.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
I get
tired in general.
She'd be funny brushing her teeth. I mean, just, you know.
Oh, plus what Kate McKinnon can do is she acts. She doesn't just stare at the cue cards and say the lines. She inhabits characters. She makes choices every time. She's an actress.
She was wonderful in Bombshell.
She happens to be hysterical at. Yeah. I haven't seen that one yet. Every time I keep bringing it up around the house, because I try to watch movies like with my wife and child as opposed to staring solo at a screen. It's always like, I don't know. So we'll watch something else. I liked Brad Pitt. Brad Pitt's – listen, when Brad Pitt first came out, I was one of the ones that was like, he's pretty, but what can he really do? And I've been proven wrong many times. He can do a lot. I do get tired of seeing celebrities in that spot. I really don't care to see Alec Baldwin anymore as Trump, and I don't like that. Let's bring in a ringer to play, a cabinet official. There's what, like 18 people now in the cast. I remember when SNL used to have like six. It's like use some of those people. Some of those people just get put in as glorified extras half the time. Use all of the cast. Get somebody to play, Trump who would show up every week. But aside from that, I thought it was fun and funny. And even had something of an informative nature to it.
So did you get to see Ad Astra?
I watched the first 20 minutes of Ad Astra, and I wasn't in the mood for it. I thought the first sequence was dazzling, and then there was a sequence that kind of lost – the followed-up, there was like one of those scenes where the characters are talking in purely expository dialogue, or like Tommy Lee Jones or something like that. It's like, well, you know that you founded this way back in the – I know I did. But there was like one of those really baldly expository moments that kind of lost
baldly
me.
Baldly expository. That's beautiful.
Right, right. Whenever – it's another example would be whenever a character says, Jim, how long have you and I known each other? Well, 20 years, I suppose. Yeah, and remember when you once told me that you wouldn't find a cure for cancer? Well, here you are. You found a cure for cancer. Yeah, but John – I still can't help feeling that.
Yeah, just let the Greek chorus do all that work. That's what they're there for.
Yeah, but so
well, let me.
Something interrupted me from Ad Astra, where I was like, I'll pause this. I'll come back to tomorrow. And the next thing you know, I was like, yeah, I'll pick it up. And I was like, well, it expired. I had 3 days to finish it, and I didn't finish it. And if I want to spend another $6 or so, I can.
Somewhere back in the archives of this program. Is my blistering review of Ad Astra.
Yeah.
Because I think it was around the holiday season, and Ferg and Agnes and I, once a year, go to the movies.
Uh-huh. Like physically go out.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that was before we were afraid we'd be shot in the movie theater. It really hurts when you get shot in the movie theater. It's a lot worse than being shot in the kidneys.
Plus the salt from the popcorn gets in the wounds and it stings even further.
Oh, I have a head. I always have a headache after I eat movie theater popcorn. But I gotta give a cowbell to Jeremy in Vermont. Stop
Jeremy
telling.
Jeremy spoke. Okay. Go ahead.
Stop telling us what you beat us to, Bob. I get away with nothing here.
Jeremy spoke at Bob today.
And so. Lady B writes and says, subject line, Randolph Mantooth. Oh, what a beautiful man. Bob knows what I'm talking about. He was dreamy, and I was a little kid. I was going to joke about him defibrillating my chest anytime, but I know Dan would rightfully slap me upside my fabulous gray curls. Smiley face. I love it when Dan calls. I feel like I'm a weird.
I'd never slap a woman upside anything.
Yeah.
I would never even do that. No.
But I wonder. You're being complimented. Wait.
I'm terrible at accepting compliments. But
I love it when Dan calls. I feel like I'm a waiter nearby eavesdropping on a fascinating conversation. Cheers to you both. If education is the best weapon against ignorance, you both happen to be two magnificent bastards.
Cowbell.
Yeah.
And I wonder. Here's
Rommel, you magnificent bastard. I read your book.
What's that from?
Patton.
The cool thing about Emergency and Randy Mantooth and Kevin Tai, they were like the hipper version of the guys on Adam 12.
Much hipper.
Which was what? Kent McCord and somebody. Somebody will know this. Somebody right now is screaming at their phone or their laptop because I don't know this, and they do. But anyway, yeah.
They'll write.
Adam 12 was like Dragnet in color. with uniforms.
With beat cops, and, yeah.
Beat cops, right. But yeah, they were
one Adam 12, one Adam 12. See the lady.
Right. I believe they were all, both of those shows were Saturday night stages.
Martin Milner.
Marty Milner, who was in Sweet Smell of Success, playing the hipster jazz musician who was framed by Burt Lancaster, who's been spoken of much tonight, framed by Burt Lancaster as a hophead, that they called at the yes, time, when marijuana smoking was enough to be thrown out of the business.
Looping all the way back to Run Silent, Run Deep, wonderful yeah. character work, supporting actor work by Jack Walden and Don Rickles.
Don Rickles, yeah, who started out as a serious dramatic
who was
actor.
No slouch as an actor.
He studied at what used to be called Carnegie Tech, then Carnegie Mellon in Pittsburgh.
Right. Yeah.
True story. Along with Jack Klugman. Jack Klugman studied there too. But what was I going
to
say?
Well, I need to get to a phone call. Because Jude has waited patiently.
Jude, just for you, I'm gonna physically hold my mouth shut so I won't interrupt you. Please.
She wants to talk with us.
Oh, okay.
And probably particularly with you, because you being a New Yorker-ish person. Jude has an activist soul and walks the walk and talks the talk.
And I won't even say, hey, Jude, but, you know, yeah, I won't start that way.
By the way, I have to do this. Lee in New York. Stop it, Bob. Stop telling us you get away with nothing. Someday offline, I'll explain the Bob stop telling us thing to you and it'll be a lot more funny. But anyway, Jude is with us.
And, hi, Jude.
And Jude has been, and
hey, Jude.
Just by way of setup, Jude has reached out to one of the, and they are underappreciated for the hellish job that they've had to do. She's reached out to a couple of the funeral homes in the greater New York City area, especially once that story broke today about an unrefrigerated truck full of bodies being found outside one of the funeral homes. Are you there, Jude?
I am.
Hi, Jude.
I felt like I was, you know, hey, hi, Josh, I'm getting a feedback.
Well, I can't do anything about that. You're coming through fine. We got a little noise on the line, but you're doing great.
Okay, good. Well, listening to the both of you, I felt like I was. That's kind of hard for me to do, Bob.
Just talk.
Okay, just talk. But I keep hearing that feedback. So I think I'll put it away.
We'll ignore it if you
will. Okay. It felt like listening to the two of you, like I was standing in some vault where there were all these real movies that were going on, and it was interesting, and I, my sense was, Bob, how good for that. I mean, how good for you to be able to have kind of a enjoyable, interconnective, you know, journey that you and Dan have shared. But why I called was I have been calling all the different nursing homes in my city and around my state, and it started a week ago. You started calling those in New York City, and some executives. You have to leave a message.
She is breaking up a little bit.
Yes.
You are breaking up a little bit. I'm trying really hard to make sentences. Sorry.
So when I read that article yesterday, it did not pick up. Humor Home is, it's Andrew Cleckley. And right away when I saw the photo, a caption of it, my heart was just completely pierced. And I checked the numbers today out of New York City, and 12,000 people have died. There was a hospice nurse. It took me back into what it was like, you know, when I, you know, would be present with loved ones with the real and what that entailed, this particular kind of people that come across, you know, with open hearts. So I ended up calling it rang for a while, and a nice gentleman came on. It's from Brooklyn. And I told him who I was, and I felt so aligned with them that I, because of my history with hospital, well, that to thank them so much, the enormous task that they have with.
Hey, Jude. So many of them. Jude, let me ask you a question. Let me ask you a question. Do you have the show audio on somewhere else while you're also on the phone?
Yeah, you're breaking up so much, Jude. I'd love to really maybe a thing to do is to email Bob or something if you can't get a good connection, because I'd love to know what you're saying. It sounds very heartfelt, and I apologize that we can't hear you, and I apologize that I want to understand you and can't reply adequately because of that. But you, what I did make out, and Bob, I don't know your feelings about it, but what I made out just reminded me of one thing too, which is that, you know, throughout tonight's conversation, I've talked about how I feel I have no right to complain, comparing it to things like World War II or Chernobyl. But here's the fact, right now, today, I don't know what the death count is. Just the other day, you know, just a couple of days ago, it was 51,000. And then before you knew it, was 58,000. I'm sure today it's beyond 60,000. I don't know what it is today.
Yeah.
But people... just whenever you are about, whenever any of you out there are about to whine because you can't get curry powder, or there's nothing good on Netflix, or it's raining and you can't get outside, just remember that you're here, okay? You're fucking alive. And those people do not know that privilege and will not ever again know that privilege. And it is a privilege. And yeah, I say that because I was dancing on the cup's edge of whether to live or die myself. And I'm alive. And I remember that every day. And I am grateful for that. And you should be too. And you should just also remember that every time you start to catch yourself whining about something you don't have. Because what you do have is the most valuable thing of all. You have life and experience waiting for you. Others will not have that privilege. Tens of thousands, millions worldwide don't have that.
Precisely. Irish Dave says it's 62,000 plus, last I heard today.
I thank you for that. It's a thing to, you know, God.
And
that's just America. You know, again, we're so American-centric. I know it's over a million, but I couldn't tell you. I don't know the numbers in any other countries. I do know that Angela Merkel has a PhD in quantum chemistry, and I wish our leader did. That much I know about the outside world of beyond the American borders.
Yeah, we are at 1,067,000. Well, let me refresh that.
I mean, we're just talking what, deaths, right? We're talking.
No, this is cases.
Cases.
We are at 1,068,696. 18,069 in New York City alone.
Yeah. Yeah.
In point of fact, New York City alone is in 5th place behind France, Spain, the United Kingdom, and Italy.
Mm.
And I did a little bit of a gut check on myself. One of my heroes is Kurt Vonnegut, Dan.
Me too.
And I are, went...
Can I just stop you for one moment?
Sure.
Because he has one of the best... Here is one of my... I don't have mantras really in my life, but I do have this one from Kurt Vonnegut. We are healthy only to the extent that our ideas are humane. That is it. That is the story of my life right there. That is to which I endeavor every single day. We are healthy only to the extent that our ideas are humane.
And in the context of what you were just talking about, I went and I checked out, because I read it from time to time. You can probably find a pull quote of it from Goodreads or whatever. If you look up Kurt Vonnegut, sitting up mud. It'll straighten you up. And to the extent that there are so many people who have not got the privilege anymore, we right now, for whatever time remains, we are alive on the only planet in the entire universe that we know beyond a shadow of a doubt supports life. Period. We can guess, we can speculate, we can statistically infer that it's got to be somewhere else, but in terms of pure knowledge, this is the only planet in the entire universe that we know supports life. And you get to be part of that. And I get to be part of that. And we get to be part of that. And holy cow. Anatole in the chat room reminds us of another great line from Vonnegut. God damn it, babies, you gotta be kind.
Are we, by the way, too, it is 8 o'clock. Are we going to do one of those we quit when we feel like it, or should we get to wrap up?
We will probably wrap it up, but I'm sorry things worked out with Jude the way they did. I think what was happening was she was listening to the program on a separate device and trying to talk on the phone at the same time.
Well, it also just sounded like a bad cell connection. So
well, no, there's I've got a gizmo problem, and I've got to remedy that, and there may be no remedy for it short of, you know, another gizmo.
Maybe it's a case.
I'm a gear slut. It's okay.
So in other words, for Jude, it could be a case of words I have heard oftentimes in my life. It's not you, it's me.
Yes.
Maybe that's it.
Yeah, it's probably largely on this end, although she may have been trying to listen. She may have had one device on, because that will create a maddening echo.
But before all is said and done, and maybe this is sort of a what do they say at the end of a sermon or a church service? Convocation?
Here endeth the lesson.
Well, here's something of a benediction, because while you were talking, I was listening, but I was also Googling. And I Googled simply the two words sitting and mud. And I got this quote from Kurt Vonnegut from Cat's Cradle. Would you mind if I just read it?
It's not really a quote. It's a
passage. God made mud. God got lonesome. So God said to some of the mud, sit up. See all I've made, said God, the hills, the sea, the sky, the stars. And I was some of the mud that got to sit up and look around. Lucky me. Lucky mud. I, mud, sat up and saw what a nice job God had done. Nice going, God. Nobody but you could have done it, God. I certainly couldn't have. I feel very unimportant compared to you. The only way I can feel the least bit important is to think of all the mud that didn't even get to sit up and look around. I got so much, and most mud got so little. Thank you for the honor. Now mud lies down again and goes to sleep. What memories for mud to have. What interesting other kinds of sitting up mud I met. I loved everything I saw. Good night. I will go to heaven now. I can hardly wait to find out for certain what my wampeter was and who was in my caress and all the good things our caress did for you. Amen. Boy, oh boy, if that isn't lovely, I don't know what is. That is something else.
I told you it was good.
He is something. He was something, man. That was... I'm going to go scrambling for a couple of the books off the shelf, I have the feeling. Once I'm done watching Galaxy Quest.
You know, you'll do my heart good if you do that.
I could do worse than spend an evening watching Galaxy Quest and reading a little Vonnegut.
Those poor people. Well, I'm going to, before we wrap up, and not to walk over your benediction, because that was very well placed.
Well, I stumbled in a few spots. Darn it. I used to be a theater major.
We had a bit of news last night that was very, very sad indeed. A dear friend of the program called in to tell us that he is not long for this world. And in a very and not long for this world in a very bad way. It's not the coronavirus. He's been stricken with pancreatic cancer that has moved around his body. And the doc said, you know, sorry, nothing we can do. He's our buddy Charlie in Tennessee. And
hey,
I've been getting email for the last 24 hours about that, because it was deeply moving that Charlie would call in to talk about it here. And I had a note from Thomas, who said, I can never comment about topics of the show in real time, because by the time I get to listen, it's usually in the early morning hours. I'm the proud father of a severely disabled young woman, 20 years of age. And by the time I get her routine done, the midnight oil has about run out. Anyway, Charlie's call hit home for me, so much so that I've not thought about much other than him and the journey he is on. My dad, the greatest man I've ever known, died of liver and pancreatic cancer. This was a guy that crossed the country during the Dust Bowl, graduated high school, and joined the Navy during World War II. Went to college on the GI Bill, married my sainted mother, and raised 7 children, all on a teacher's salary. He retired after 36 years of teaching. 2 years later, he was diagnosed, and 3 weeks later, he was dead. I still get really angry when I think of how God called him home. A man as great and honorable cut down after a lifetime of breaking his balls for so many others. His death was fast, painful, and brutal. Fortunately for him, he had his family at his side. He damn sure got the extra blast of morphine when he needed it or not. I hope Charlie has that kind of support during his last mile. If it's any comfort to a man I've never met, I wish you peace and compassion through this process. If I know Charlie through the show, I can take it on face value that he, like my dad, is a great man, and that memories of him shall buttress the hearts of all who will miss him. And then Thomas goes on to share his deep and abiding appreciation of Lady B as well. I so enjoy when she calls the show. In addition to her essays that she sends in, I appreciate her perspective, especially the white-black dynamic. My folks educated us about people from day one. My father was a musician. He explained to me that he never saw the color of the person, but could they play? By playing with people of other backgrounds, one then understands that people are people, and the notion of division and degradation of others based on their ethnicity was horseshit. I'm a white guy. I once wrote a note to my daughter's school where I used the phrase, you people. I didn't use it as a means of including everyone in the topic I was presenting. It got back to me that the staff, all black women, were all up in arms at my words. I didn't understand, and I went and had a meeting with them. I apologized profusely when I got the wake-up call. And I also thanked them for calling me for it. I've never uttered that phrase since. Lady B's perspective teaches me that I don't know shit, no matter how well I was brought up. Thanks, Bob, and happy anniversary to you and Agnes. So thank you for that, Thomas. Thank you very kindly. I love the effort that members of this community put in to keeping this community together and continuing to build this community.
And it is a community.
And we'll give Lady B the last word. She says, not to contradict Dan, but some people are plenty aware of what they're doing. And they do it anyway, because ironically, it makes them feel more alive. I've been very aware of what's been going on. I have an overabundance of caution, but because my PTSD always has me on constant alert, it's about to make me break. I read an article today about how people with PTSD and obsessive compulsive disorder finally feel in their element. So in a sense, I don't feel as weird. I do want to live through it. I do want to enjoy my life. But the stress is the same. Economic and social conditions don't make it so easy. And I understand what you're saying, but sometimes we need to pull back and look at the people we might be criticizing. Sometimes they're doing exactly all they know to do, and sometimes it gives them motivation. Everybody approaches things in different ways. I love you, Dan. Stay healthy, and look forward to hearing from you again, and soon. Lady B.
I love you too, Lady B, and I do think you should have the last word. And, you know, given that we started out this conversation with Maya Angelou, and now we are ending it with Thomas and Charles and Lady B, I don't think I have any right nor any desire to speak any more of movies or to make any more jokes. I think that the last word has already been spoken, and all I should do is listen.
Hear, hear. I often feel the same, Dan. Stay healthy, stay safe, give our best to
you too, my friend.
To the wonderful Helene and your lovely daughter. And yep. we'll do this again just as quick as you feel like you'd like to.
Maybe the end of May. You know, we'll see what post COVID we'll see what life is about then. I won't even be post COVID. Are you kidding? I'll be in the middle of it.
No, but we're not gonna be post COVID for a very long time.
That was my stupid optimistic self jumping out for a moment.
A little wishcraft, if you will.
It's like a little kid coming out in the middle of the party to embarrass daddy. but anyway, yeah, let's listen to each other in a month and see where we're at, see what's happening.
All right, thanks, Dan. Like I said, right, stay safe. You, love you, my friend.
Happy anniversary.
Thank you. Bye. The one and only Dan Fisher. And an otherwise wonderful evening's conversation. Thanks to all of you for sharing your precious finite time, because it is finite, engaging in this little ongoing conversation, however you so choose. Thank you to each and every one of you who keep this program on the air. Thanks to our anonymous friend, and thanks to Jeremy, and thanks very kindly to Jude for helping us finish off April this evening. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Stay safe, stay home, avoid the maggots as though they were the plague, because they are. Later.